from fuel rationing, cuts to taxes and duties, and even free buses. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, looking at how each nation is responding to the increase in fuel prices.
Some of that action, some of it, surely would be welcome here. Staying with the Prime Minister, he gives reckless junior doctors 48 hours to call off those strikes. And we have the Chief Executive of NHS England taking your calls in the next hour. Is it a payday for some motorists?
They should complain to their lender. If they're not satisfied with that, they should complain to the Financial Ombudsman. And we are setting up a dedicated team to make sure that lenders are going to comply with the rules.
That's the boss of the Financial Conduct Authority, Nikhil Rathi. He's going to join us later in the show. And as the grooming gang inquiry starts, we'll be asking, what exactly does it need to determine? News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Prime Minister has given resident doctors in England 48 hours to call off their planned strike action. The six-day walkout over jobs and pay is due to begin next Tuesday. Sir Keir Starmer has warned that a proposed deal, including 1,000 extra training posts, could be withdrawn if the strike goes ahead. Speaking to LBC last week, Dr. Callum Parr from the British Medical Association explained why it decided on more walkouts.
What we're looking at going forward is the potential of further real terms pay cuts. This is on the background of 10 years of real terms pay cuts. So while we recognise that the government has started the journey, we need to continue on that to make sure that doctors' pay isn't eroded further.
And Sir Jim Mackey, the Chief Executive Officer at NHS England, will be joining Nick later this morning and taking your calls. The White House has insisted the US will act within international law during its war in Iran. President Trump's threat to target Tehran's power plants has raised questions over whether America would be committing war crimes. Mr. Trump says such attacks could take place if Iran doesn't make a deal to end the conflict. The White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt told reporters last night that diplomacy remains the president's first choice.
Of course, this administration and the United States Armed Forces will always act within the confines of the law. But with respect to achieving the full objectives of Operation Epic Fury, President Trump is going to move forward unabated, and he expects the Iranian regime to make a deal with the administration.
Separately, Sir Keir Starmer is expected to chair a COBRA meeting later to discuss the conflict in the Middle East. From today, police in England and Wales will no longer record what are known as non-crime hate incidents. The College of Policing says the move will make clear that lawful free speech is not a police matter. NCHIs include arguments or abuse on social media which cause harm but are not illegal. Millions of drivers who are missold car finance have been told they should receive compensation this year. The financial watchdog says around 12.1 million deals are eligible. That's down, though, from 14 million agreements initially expected to be covered. And shop price inflation edged up in March as higher costs from the Middle East conflict started to feed into supply chains. Official figures show prices were 1.2% higher than a year ago, but still below the three-month average of 1.3%. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,127. It closed up 160 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most today. The odd shower in the southeast, sunny spells developing for many areas by the afternoon, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
British Gas have this thing. We call it home care. We'll fix all sorts, and it's unlimited repairs. Expert engineers will solve the upset of boilers not boiling or taps that won't wet. Electrics playing tricks or a pipe that's broke. We're there for everyone, even blue furry folk. Your home won't feel booby-trapped. It'll feel just like new. British Gas, taking care of things and looking after you. T's and C's apply. Excess options available per repair.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after seven on Tuesday, the 31st of March. Yesterday, another summit and another plea for cooperation with banks, fuel companies and others. We've all got to do our bit, says the Prime Minister. Well, it's only the bit you're doing. The war is bringing an extra £20 million a day in energy taxes. How about looking at the more than 50% that you take in a litre of unleaded or a litre of diesel and giving some relief there? We'll look at what is happening elsewhere in the world. In other news, staying with the Prime Minister, he talks tough. He talks about reckless junior doctors. He tells them, you've got 48 hours to call off those strikes planned for immediately after Easter. He's echoing one of his senior colleagues, Health Secretary Wes Streeting, who said last week,
I said this was the best and final offer. We are at a point where the resident doctors' committee's expectations are beyond reasonable and realistic.
The grooming gang scandal inquiry begins today. Unfortunately, it's yet to have a location. It could last until 2029, but it is starting. So what does it need to find out? Back in December, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood pledged to root out the perpetrators of this national disgrace.
The sickening acts of a minority of evil men must not be allowed to marginalise or demonise entire communities of law-abiding citizens.
Coming back to health matters, the chief executive of NHS England is here taking your calls in the next hour. The suggestion that millions of drivers could be in for more than £800 each from the car finance scandal, we'll be telling you, if you're not aware, exactly what it is, and perhaps more importantly, if you are aware and you're due for the cash, how to get your hands on the loot. And to North Essex, where the scourge of hare coursing has returned, destroying crops, in some instances, destroying farm vehicles as well. A farmer from North Essex, who did not decline to give their identity, told LBC,
we're out three times a day, as a very minimum, checking that they're not driving on crops, destroying gates, just generally terrorising us as local farmers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
To briefly refer back to that, as if life isn't tough enough down on the farm at the moment with the imposition of taxes. Now these poor individuals are seeing their crops destroyed and in some instances vehicles burnt out as well. We'll have a report later in the show from North Essex. So, Keir Starmer last night appealed to oil and banking executives to help Britain deal with a looming 1970s-style energy shock. And if you weren't around, and many, many of you weren't, it was extraordinary. I recall having to do my homework by candlelight. That is no word of a lie. And I think the television used to switch off at 10 or 10.30 because we were all told to go to bed because we didn't have enough power to power the tellies. Yes, all of the above is true, unbelievably. Now, he called in figures from Shell, BP, Centrica, HSBC and others. And other energy bosses told them tackling the cost of living crisis had to be a joint effort. Here's a little of what he said.
This is going to have to be a joint effort. The government can't do it on its own. You can't do it on your own. We're going to have to work together on this, which is why I wanted to have the conversation here this afternoon.
Joint effort? What are you doing? As one paper reveals this morning on its front page, The Times, Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, is in line for a multi-billion pound tax windfall. £20 million a day. That, if it lasts for a length of time, will obviously be in billions of pounds being made available. £8 billion a year from VAT on petrol and taxes on the profits of oil and gas. £8 billion. So it's a little bit bloody rich, isn't it, Prime Minister, looking at the oil companies and the energy companies and asking what they're going to do. What are you going to damn well do? Every time you put a litre of diesel or a litre of unleaded into your tank, into your motorbike, into your van, more than 50% goes to the government. So what's happening elsewhere in the world? LBC's Henry Riley looks at what other countries have been doing to try and support their citizens.
From fuel rationing, cuts to taxes and duties, and even free buses, each nation has taken a different approach to help ease the impact.
The government has signed off on a temporary package of measures in response to rising fuel prices. The measures agreed by Cabinet this morning will see excise duty on diesel cut by 20 cent and by 15 cent on petrol until the end of May.
Reductions now in forecourt prices in Ireland. Taoiseach Micheál Martin.
The measures are targeted and temporary and affordable, although the excise duty reductions will help everybody. They're more universal in their impact.
Elsewhere in Europe,
major disruption on roads across France, including on the Paris Ring Road, as lorries stage go slows and blockages to protest against rising fuel prices.
LBC's Paris correspondent Peter Allen.
The government has responded with cuts of 20 cents per litre, but only for a limited number of businesses, and only for the month of April. I'm Peter Allen, reporting for LBC in Paris.
VAT on fuel in Spain has been more than halved, expected to save Spaniards 25p per litre on some fuels. Levies also reduced in Portugal. Prime Minister Luis Montenegro.
We charged each Portuguese citizen and each company less. The government's focus is, of course, to mitigate the impacts on the lives of the Portuguese.
Elsewhere, frustration at the pace of help in Germany.
Everybody is unhappy, everybody is furious, especially public transport companies who demand more help from 1st of April onwards. Prices at petrol stations can only go up once a day at 12 o'clock.
Columnist from Die Zeit, Jürgen Krönig, says people are crossing the border in search of cheaper fuel.
It started immediately, not only to Poland, but to Czech Republic as well, because the prices are there significantly lower.
Partly because ministers in Poland have cut VAT by nearly two-thirds, from 23% to 8%. Prime Minister Donald Tusk.
That means a reduction of around 7 euro cents.
In Sweden, duty on petrol is down 7p per litre and 3p on diesel, but it's not just Europe. India has significantly cut their duties.
In a big move, the government has reduced excise duty by 10 rupees per litre on both petrol and diesel. This brings excise on petrol down to roughly 3 rupees per litre.
New Zealand's outlined a rationing plan. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon.
There have been reports of some shortages of fuel in some regions of New Zealand, particularly diesel in rural areas. This has happened because of some minor hoarding of fuel.
Whilst in Australia.
Good evening. Relief at last for drivers as petrol prices soar, with the government to halve the fuel excise for 3 months.
Two states will now offer free public transport, and nationally, excise duty has been slashed. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
People should enjoy their Easter. And it's important as well that we keep the economy going.
Henry Riley there, taking a global view of exactly what's happening. We'll put some of those points to James Murray later in this hour, who's going to be joining us. He's the Chief Secretary to the Treasury. That's later. But let's get views now from Nick Butler, who's Professor, Energy Economist, previously Group Vice President for Strategy and Policy Development at BP, and served as a Senior Advisor to former Prime Minister Gordon Brown. What are the levers? It's all very well moaning at oil companies and moaning at energy companies and everyone else and talking about joint efforts. In your view, Professor, what are the levers a government could pull? Good morning.
Good morning. Apart from the tax changes, which you've talked about, which I think would make sense and be in line with what everybody else is doing, I think they should now be actually encouraging, incentivizing, pushing the companies and removing the restrictions on the companies to allow them to maximize supply within the UK from the North Sea. I think that that is not going to solve the whole thing, but it's one part of the overall story. My sense, Nick, is that you talked about the 1970s. Mm-hmm. This reminded me a bit of the last week of the year 2020, in the run-up to COVID, when gradually complacency and people saying, just carry on, it's not a problem for us, it's somewhere else, was suddenly overtaken by the realization that this was going to hit us and hit us hard. And I think if we'd prepared a little earlier then, or now, the impact would have been less.
What value these summits the Prime Minister calls, Professor?
Well, if, as you in your introduction said, if it's a two-way street of ideas, I think business has a lot to offer to contribute to put this right, to ensure there's no profiteering, which I don't think there is, but if there is, let's have it out in the open and have people prosecuted. But actually, looking at the supply situation, looking at the situation in the Gulf, which is very serious and is clearly going to go on for months at least now, and what they can do. And an open, honest dialogue between business and government is better than just sniping at each other.
How can you be confident there's no profiteering? Speaking from personal knowledge, I recall I was paying just south of 130 a litre for unleaded prior to the Iran conflict. Now I'm paying 145. Surely some of that oil or petrol had to be in the country prior to the conflict, Professor.
It depends where the companies bought it from. But I think there should be a forensic inquiry, a forensic audit of what they paid for the oil and what they were charging you and the rest of us. And if anybody was profiteering, they should be prosecuted.
Final question. No one knows the answer to this. Not the president, not the Ayatollahs, not Bibi Netanyahu. But do you have any sense of how long this might last? And where is the inflection point at which it gets really quite disastrous for global economy?
Well, I think we've gone through a period where people thought it would all be over quite quickly and there would be a political settlement of some sort. I think Mr. Trump believed that and many people here believe that. I think we're well past that now because of the damage to the equipment and the facilities around the Gulf, which is not going to be repaired immediately. The Qatari gas is going to take 5 years, according to their government, to put back in place. So I think the crisis is now moved on to a different sort of problem, which will take years to solve. Well, what would cause a real challenge? I think if other Gulf states now got involved in an open war, that would really shake the whole region and very much disrupt all the supply, including the limited amount that's still coming out of other parts of the Middle East.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Professor Nick Butler, energy economist, previously Group Vice President for Strategy and Policy Development at BP and served as a senior advisor to former Prime Minister Gordon Brown. The government could be doing so much more. They talk about all in this together. What precisely are they doing? Bear in mind they will take more than 50% of the money you will pay later today if you fill up your car, your van, your bus, whatever it might be. The government could do so much more. I find it appalling these summits continually held, but let's get your views. Plus, radio silence at Radio 2. Another crisis over there for the BBC. They just keep on coming, don't they? From Strictly Come Dancing, the news at 10. Here's the handover between Vernon Kay and Scott Mills, as he, Mills, signed off last week.
The video I like the best is him just shoveling a pizza down his face when he's finished the photo shoot.
You were, weren't you?
Yeah, did a great job. Bravo, Patrick.
Bravo, Patrick. See you tomorrow.
No, you won't. Another crisis hits the BBC, and we're into that in the next hour. 7:16 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister has given resident doctors in England 48 hours to call off planned strike action next week or face losing 1,000 extra training places. The White House has insisted the US will act within international law during its war in Iran. And police in England and Wales will no longer record what are known as non-crime hate incidents from today. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, the odd shower in the southeast, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very busy on the M25, anti-clockwise at junction 25 at the A10. It was after an accident that happened earlier. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover because of the ongoing bridge works. So definitely do expect delays again this morning. In Mitcham, Cricket Green is closed eastbound for the emergency repair works and there are queues back onto the London Road. In Lewisham, the A20 is closed westbound because of an accident and that's causing quite lengthy delays on the approach. Also problems on the underground. Lancaster Gate station on the central line is closed because of a shortage of staff. And on the Piccadilly line, Hyde Park Corner station is also closed.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve the perfect one instantly. Get £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone.
Even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder Which have recommended us 8 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 20 minutes after 7, this is what you're saying about the increase in petrol prices. Paul says, the petrol prices in Malta are subsidised by the government. The prices have not gone up since the war, and these prices are petrol. I'm assuming this is a litre, I'm sure it is. €1.34 diesel, €1.21. That's enough to make you Maltese cross, isn't it? Nico says, I've just filled up my mid-sized SUV at Merseyside's cheapest petrol station. 173.9 per litre of diesel. It used to cost me £70 to fill the tank. It's cost me £96.86 this morning. £16.14 of that was VAT. I only use my car to commute to and from work every day and do grocery shopping, so I cannot use my car less, as advised. My monthly fuel spend has now increased to £400 a month. I think it is a bit rich, ha ha ha, for the government to sit there and say we need to do more together. What are they doing? And there is the headlines of some of your papers this morning. The Eye tells PM meets UK fuel bosses as prices rise at the pumps. And it is the Times that gives us that line that I mentioned earlier. War brings in £20 million a day extra in energy taxes. That, if it were to continue, would be worth £8 billion a year. So, as one of our contributors was saying, it's a two-way street. If they want more from the energy companies, what exactly are the government going to do? Quickly through some of the other front pages, the Daily Telegraph. Well, this is very appropriate seeing as we have the head of NHS England joining us in the next hour to take your calls. But the headline is Starmer's 48-hour ultimatum to doctors. But the front page picture, and it's almost a life-size picture, the joy of having what's called a broadsheet page to lay out. It gives you so much more scope. There is a picture of Scott Mills axed over what's called a historic relationship. There's this picture also on the front page of the Daily Express using the word sacked. It is the lead story of the Sun, Mills crisis for BBC, and the Daily Mirror. And it has to be said, they broke the story actually before even the BBC announced them. The Mirror was ahead of it. Sacked Mills in 2016 cop probe. This was the fact that he was probed by police in 2016 over what were reported as serious sexual offences against a teenage boy. We'll be looking at that as yet another crisis engulfs the BBC, as, of course, the Director General, the boss, reaches his last few days at work. Was it that they decided it had to be dealt with and let the new incoming DG have a clear run at it? We'll look at that a little bit later in the show and ask your level of confidence in the BBC. Well, the Director General of the BBC clearly wasn't working from home yesterday, but there is a call for civil servants calling for mandatory office working to be scrapped to protect them from higher living costs brought on by the Iran war that we were discussing just now. The largest union for Whitehall staff, it's the PCS, Public and Commercial Services Union, urging ministers to end rules requiring them to go into the office for at least 3 days a week. Let's bring into the conversation Amir Kotecha, who was former head of Palestinian issues at the British Embassy in Tel Aviv and former British Consul General in Russia. Recently left the diplomatic service. You may recall I spoke with him. He said that the government is being constrained by strict interpretations of international law and talked about the civil service being mired in a culture of dysfunction. Amir Kotecha joins us again now. Good to have you on. Thanks very much. Mr. Kotecha, your response to this story. So the price of fuel is going up, possibly as well bus fares and everything, so they want to work from home more. Your reaction. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to be with you again. I mean, look, it's outrageous, frankly, what the PCS are saying. I mean, civil servants already have a very generous hybrid working arrangement. As you say, they only have to come in 3 days a week, which I think most listeners would think is very generous. I think is overly generous, frankly. And so for them to use this Iran conflict as a sort of excuse to drive through an even more generous set of terms and conditions, I think is just totally ridiculous. I mean, one thing worth saying, Nick, is civil servants working in London, working out of a London office, are actually paid extra for that to compensate them for the costs of commuting in. So they get something called a London waiting allowance, which is about £5,000, or they're put on a higher pay bracket. And that's specifically designed to compensate them for the cost of commuting. So there's absolutely no leg to stand on here.
What sticks in my memory from our initial conversation, Amir, if I may call you that, is the way that in many instances, on days of crisis, Whitehall was so set on a certain, whether it was an empowerment day or whatever it might be. Just remind the listeners, if you would, of a couple of the most egregious examples.
Yeah, well, as I sort of said in a Times piece I did when I left, I was invited to a World Afro Day celebration at the very time that Kabul was falling to the Taliban. But that was just one example, Nick. There was a Islamophobia Awareness Month. There was a Windrush Day. There was obviously Black Lives Matters events still going on. So there was a constant pattern of this stuff. Look, I think this is just the latest example of civil servants, or at least their union, which I don't think is doing them any favours in this case, giving an impression of them as shirkers and coasters. And I think actually, if you ask the average civil servant, they would probably admit that the arrangement they have at the moment, only having to go in 3 days, it's already a pretty generous and flexible one.
I realise this is an extraordinarily broad question, but I mean, how would you describe the morale within much of Whitehall and the civil service?
I mean, it's pretty bad in large part, especially in the Foreign Office, which was my department. I think, you know, one of the reasons for that is they are trying to trim down headcount. It's become so bloated and vast that they've now very belatedly realised they're going to have to shed some people. So obviously that's having an impact on morale. And, you know, it's not nice to see anyone lose their jobs, but I think this has happened because the civil service has grown into such a vast, unwieldy beast. I mean, it's 500,000 people now. It's, I think, 40% bigger now, the civil service, than it was about 10 years ago. So, you know, it's not great morale. I think actually morale might be improved by getting people in the office. I mean, it's not particularly rewarding being sat at home talking to everyone over Teams. I think actually getting them in might help things.
Amir, thanks for your input on this. Amir Kotecha, former head of Palestinian issues at the British Embassy in Tel Aviv, and served as British Consul General in Russia, recently leaving the diplomatic service, citing some of the examples he revisited just there. Just coming up on 7:27. Well, this is the PCS, the Public and Commercial Services Union, saying the conflict is, and I quote, pushing up costs for workers who are already struggling to make ends meet. That's not unique, of course, to people in the civil service. They also cite the advice from the International Energy Agency. Now, this is extraordinary. The IEA, International Energy Agency, advises individuals to use public transport instead of cars, wherever possible, I'm sure, to drive slowly, to avoid air travel, and switch to electric rather than gas stoves. Well, if you've got a gas stove, you're not going to rip it out and put in an electric one, are you? These people are so out of touch, as I have to say, is the Prime Minister, with this suggestion that he says, as he brings the energy companies together, we're all in this together, we have to work on this, it needs to be a joint effort, and he's telling the bosses of the various companies such as the HSBC, Centrica, Shell, BP, talking of public fears that the economic impact is going to hit them, their families and their households. I think probably uppermost in their minds at the moment is energy bills, petrol and also food prices. As if the government has absolutely no responsibility and can do nothing about it. It is ridiculous. Here's what you're saying on social media. This comes in from Tony in Penzance. Instead of whinging about the price of fuel, should we all not recognise the time when we can race around the roads polluting the planet should and must come to an end? We have had it too easy. I don't think, in all honesty, Tony, that anyone now goes out for a drive just for fun. Because of the amount of money that it costs, not just, by the way, not just in fuel prices, but the wear and tear on your car, the servicing, the potholes, and God knows what else. No one, these folk, honestly, Tony, they're only in their cars if they have to be. This coming in concerning the fuel prices, it's quite obvious that the government needs to be doing more, but what are we hearing from Kemi Badenoch? Has she got any ideas? Well, she's got some ideas. We talked about some of those yesterday, didn't we? Talked about the idea of getting £200 a year off your fuel bill, which, look, I mean, it's all very welcome, but it's hardly going to be a real massive fuel game changer, is it, in the fuel prices? Raymond's in Malaga. Okay, what's happening in Spain? What sort of prices are you paying over there? Good morning.
Yeah, it's about the same, but it's in euros. It's How are you doing anyway,
I'm
Nick?
Good, thank you, sir. Yeah, good to have you on.
I've been listening to you for a long time.
Thank you.
I spoke to you before.
Right.
Yeah, it's about 152 for unleaded, and it's 182 or something like that for diesel.
Is that in euros, or is that have you converted it?
It's in euros.
That's in euros.
Okay. Yeah, that's my petrol station just down the hill for me.
Okay. And they are doing, they've halved the VAT, or at least that's what we heard on Henry Riley's report. How has that gone down locally?
Yeah, well, what they do is you go into the petrol station, you get like 50 euros, and then you go to the counter, and they get, you know, you have to pay 40 euros.
Right.
What they do is they instead of going through a rigmarole of expensive whatever, you know, the petrol station gets their VAT bill, and they don't have, you know, they just don't have to pay that discount.
And locally, do people think that's a good measure? Do you think the government aren't doing enough? How would you characterise it, Raymond?
Yeah, they've done it before. It works fine. I think, in actual fact, even Ireland do it the same. I think it's a cross-euro thing.
Well, Ireland, yes, it's between 20% and 15% cuts in diesel or unleaded, as we heard in Henry Riley's report. Raymond, thanks. Good to hear from you again. Terence, I hope you can hold. We're going to talk about civil service, but we need to do it the other side of the news because we're already running late. I've referenced that front page story about just how much money is rolling into the Treasury.
As the Treasury rakes in billions from higher fuel prices, pressure grows for a tax cut at the pumps. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
Plus the big car finance scandal. CEO of the FCA, Financial Conduct Authority, Nikhil Rassi, said yesterday,
they should complain to their lender. If they're not satisfied with that, they should complain to the Financial Ombudsman. And we are setting up a dedicated team to make sure that lenders are going to comply with the rules.
He will join us directly after the news to tell us how you can get into gear and get your hands on the cash. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get some news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Resident doctors in England are being given 48 hours by the Prime Minister to call off planned strike action next week. Sir Keir Starmer has warned a proposed deal, including 1,000 extra training posts in the NHS, could be withdrawn if it goes ahead. The Prime Minister will chair an emergency COBRA meeting later as the war in Iran continues to impact the economy. Figures show a rise in shop price inflation as well as big increases in the cost of oil and gas. And police in England and Wales will no longer record what are known as non-crime hate incidents from today. Officials say the change has been made in a bid to end the policing of everyday arguments which don't cross a criminal threshold. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most, the odd shower in the southeast, widespread sunny spells developing by the afternoon, a high of 16 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
A comprehensive plan for peace with Iran has finally been agreed. The only problem is it's all still in Donald Trump's head. We'll be exploring what this means.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maiklis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Idle money lies in your current account, picking crumbs out of its belly button, wondering, should I eat them? But when you start investing with Monzo, your money's always busy. It turns on regular investments, invests your spare change, and tops up your stocks and shares ISA. It even helps you make sense of risk and return. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. You could get back less than you invest. Monzo current account required. UK residents 18 plus. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Going to be talking about the civil service, morale, Terence with you in just a moment. We always take finance around this time of the morning, 7:34, and let's go to Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, is going to tell us details about the money that's rolling into the Treasury, courtesy of energy taxes, and I think you've written about that in your column today in City AM. Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, it's profiteering. Sound the alarm. We know the government doesn't like that. Well, we've heard of price gouging allegations. What about tax gouging? The price of oil, the price of fuel at the pump is such that the government is in line for multi-billion pound windfall tax of its own, thanks to the relentless march upwards in energy prices driven by the war in the Middle East. The Times today has crunched the numbers and looked at the figures that the government is now expecting to pull in about £20 million additional revenue a day through the levies and taxes linked to the price of oil and gas. The Treasury will bring in about an extra 8 billion quid a year from VAT on petrol and indeed taxes on the profits of oil and gas firms. That's if fuel prices remain at their elevated level throughout the year. The government has said that effectively they're not intending to cut taxes on fuel at the pumps. We might now have an explanation as to why they need this money. Now, to be fair to the government, they would point out that any gains they make from additional tax windfall through things like petrol and diesel and indeed the oil and gas companies themselves will be offset by the economic damage that they're going to have to endure because of this crisis. But nevertheless, it does ramp up the debate about the extent to which this country is not choosing to follow the path of others. I think, as some of your listeners have already been discussing with you, we've seen examples, I think, in Poland, in Spain, in Australia, where they have cut the tax people have to pay at the pump. We're not doing that in this country, despite the Prime Minister yesterday saying he would pull every lever to try to ease the burden on consumers. I'm not sure where those levers are to be found today. We heard yesterday from the RAC Foundation, that's the charitable wing of the RAC, who said that the gap between petrol and diesel prices, both of which are highly elevated, the gap between the two is now the largest since 2003. And in their words, that leaves white van man or woman bleeding cash just to stay on the road. And there are about 14 million or so diesel vehicles in this country, and about 5 million of those are vans. You can consider the role they play in the economy and the prices that they are now having to pay. Our listeners will be feeling that this morning and indeed for many days and weeks ahead. So there is now a pretty urgent debate about the extent to which the government could intervene to relieve that pressure. As of the weekend, at least, ministers were saying that there is no need to do so.
Rising prices on the forecourts, rising prices in our supermarkets too, Christian.
I'm afraid so. We know from latest figures out today that shop price inflation is ticking up in the month of March. That is no surprise. And we can see reasons for that when you consider that Prince's Group, one of Britain's biggest food suppliers, they are behind, everything, I suppose, from tins of tuna to super noodles to Branston beans, have written to supermarkets and said, we've no choice but to put a 5% cost increase across all products. That letter to supermarkets was revealed by the Grocer, the retail industry news website, yesterday. They said that this is because the pressures are affecting every stage of our supply chain, from raw material sourcing to manufacturing, packaging and distribution. So you have suppliers telling supermarkets that they're going to have to put the prices up. Do you expect supermarkets are now going to have to put their prices up? Well, some of them will, some of them won't. It's an intensely competitive field, but the government is trying once again to haul supermarket bosses in for an urgent meeting to discuss prices. I believe the Chancellor tried to do this at the end of last week and supermarket bosses all said, we're a bit busy. So they've rescheduled it. Not all of them are attending, but many of them are. I find it a bit of a stunt, I have to say. The government is imposing costs on these supermarkets left, right and centre. Everything from packaging taxes to energy levies to new labour costs. It's a complete nightmare. They remain intensely competitive and highly successful businesses. And the government, I think, is looking for a photo op and an opportunity to wag their fingers and lecture them about prices. I'm afraid it doesn't sit entirely well with me.
Well said, Christian. I'm totally in accord with you. Check out his editor's piece in City AM today. Christian May ran time, talk around the same time tomorrow, 7:39. I've come away a little bit early because I want to get Terence and Chingford in the conversation. We spoke about 20 minutes or so ago about this initiative from the Civil Service Union that people should not have to come into the office for the mandatory 3 days because of energy costs. Terence and Chingford, your reaction to that? Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello.
I suspect he told you what your viewers have probably wanted to hear rather than the actuality.
What is the actuality?
Both in terms of the accommodation and what you've thought about these diversity awareness days. As far as accommodation is concerned, experience is very much dependent on what you do and where your staff are. For me personally, it was a waste of time. But simply because...
I don't understand. What was a waste of time? Sorry.
Going to the office, because my staff are based in Bristol, Manchester, Leeds, and my manager's based in Birmingham. So if I was going to the office, it's just me, basically, and I'll be contacting them through the same device, my laptop. So I was faced...
All so spread across the country? Is that the particular...
Because we're in very senior positions. We're very specialist people, and... we're not located one person because
Can you tell me what department you were in or what you did?
I don't mention my employer, but because I don't think I would drag them in, or my former employer, because I'm retired now.
Right.
But I drafted legislation. Right. So it's key job, works with ministers, has to be done.
Right.
If
you want to see the ministers, it's a good idea to go to the office.
I'm based in London, so I was fine for that.
Well, then I'd suggest that the staff who are out in Birmingham and Bristol and elsewhere need to come.
Because they don't do the same job as I do.
Have got two people doing the same job?
No, they either supported me or they
bring them in.
Well, why?
It's obviously you're going to achieve more by physically seeing each other the 3 days a week and then referring up to the minister and briefing him or her as to how to progress.
How much would it cost a taxpayer to bring somebody from Bristol to London every day?
Make them move. If they don't like it, they don't keep the job.
And then
it's their choice to live in Bristol. You're not forced. You're not mandated to live in Bristol.
They're not getting somebody Lexus experience to do the job, wouldn't I?
Save some money. I mean, that is the real world, and we don't all have extraordinary pensions. Look, I'm glad. Look, enjoy your retirement. I hope it goes well, but I do think the idea, there's no point me coming to London because my colleagues are in Bristol and where is it, Birmingham. Well, let's rework it so that you can all meet the ministers face to face. Terence, enjoy your retirement. Thank you, 7:41. Let's go to other matters. And lenders who sold what are called rip-off loans to millions of motorists were told to crack on with paying back what could be a bill in its billions of pounds. It is, of course, this scandal, as it were. Now, the announcement was made by the FCA, the Financial Conduct Authority, and they reckon there could be more than 12 million missold motor finance packages. More details now from Nikhil Ratti, who is CEO of the Financial Conduct Authority. Just briefly, if we can start, Mr. Ratti, what is the scandal? How would somebody listening now know they might be involved in it? Good morning to you.
Morning, Nick. As you said, lenders broke the law. They broke the law because they didn't disclose important information about people's car loan agreements. There have been a lot of court cases around this. We've now got clarity. We announced yesterday the final rules for a compensation scheme, 12 million agreements eligible, around £830 on average per agreement in compensation. People who have complained already or who complain in the next few months will get their money sooner, and we're hoping that means millions of people get their money by the end of 2026.
The FCA has split the scheme into two parts, one covering 2007 to 2014 and then 2014 to 2024, I read. Why so?
We're clear that lenders broke the law all the way back to 2007. And a scheme is the quickest, fairest, most cost-effective way to get this sorted out and put consumers right. Some lenders were questioning whether we had the powers to launch a scheme for 2007 to 14. We think we do. But to make sure that nothing is delayed for the millions of people who took out agreements between 2014 to 24, we split the scheme in two in case it is challenged.
Now, the key seems to be whether my listeners had a DCA, a discretionary commission arrangement. How do they find out? How do they know that?
Yeah, there are three elements of unfairness. You're right, discretionary commission arrangements is the main one. That is where a dealer had an incentive to sell you a loan with a higher interest rate because they got more commission. The other elements of unfairness are if there was a high commission or if there was a tie between the lender and the dealer that was not disclosed to you. The what you should do is, if you are concerned, complain to your lender, and millions of people have done that already. And if you don't do that,
your lender being Santander or HSBC or Lloyds or whatever it might be.
Exactly, or sometimes the manufacturer's lenders.
Right.
That will mean you'll get your money quicker. But in any case, lenders will now have to look at all of their agreements between 2007 and 2024, identify the customers that are eligible and contact them if they're owed compensation. And ultimately, your listeners have until the end of August 2027 to opt in if they haven't heard. One really important point I want to stress is you do not need to use a claims management company or a law firm who may take 30% of any compensation you are owed.
I mean, respectfully, that would be nuts, wouldn't it, to use one of these agencies that constantly texts me about some of my cars?
Our scheme is free to use and will make sure you get your money promptly. And yes, you need to be really wary about some of these scam texts that have been going around. You should report them to 7726. The Information Commissioner can investigate them. And we've taken action against over 800 misleading adverts by claims management companies.
Lastly, what should someone who thinks they might be involved, Nikhil, what should they be looking out for next?
If they have complained already, within a few months, their lender will be in touch with them. If they haven't complained, the lender will, towards the end of the year, early into next year, contact them and explain what they need to do. That will tell them how much they're owed, and they will have a period of time of 1 month to decide whether they want to accept that offer or not. And if they do, they'll get their money 1 month after that.
So if they're so motivated, they could make an inquiry now, though, directly to the bank or the lending company as well?
Absolutely.
Right.
And we would say my advice would be to your listeners, if you are concerned, complain now. That means your complaint is in the system and it will be dealt with sooner.
Let's give that website, thank you very much, fca.org.uk/car-finance. Have I read that correctly, Nikhil? Have I got that right?
That's right, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks for your time. Nick Alrati, CEO of the Financial Conduct Authority. One last time, and we will put it up on our website as a link. FCA, as in Financial Conduct Authority, fca.org.uk/car-finance, all one word. Thank you for your time, Mr. Ratti. Coming up in the next hour, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood, back in December, pledging to root out the perpetrators of Britain's scandalous grooming gangs.
The sickening acts of a minority of evil men must not be allowed to marginalise or demonise entire communities of law-abiding citizens.
Good news, the inquiry starts today. Bad news, we don't know where, and it could last until 2029. Justice for the victims? That's later in the show. 7:46, LBC News headlines now, Dominic Ellis.
Resident doctors in England are being given 48 hours by the Prime Minister to call off planned strike action next week or face losing 1,000 extra training places. Sir Keir Starmer will chair another COBRA meeting later to discuss what can be done to minimise the economic impact of the Iran war. And police in England and Wales will no longer from today record what are known as non-crime hate incidents. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, the odd shower in the southeast, widespread sunny spells developing later, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise, junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. It's because of an ongoing investigation where one lane is closed. Also busy on the North Circular Road, westbound at Staples Corner, and that was after an accident at the end of this Staples Corner flyover. Everything's just reopened, but it's still very slow. Also in Lewisham, there are delays on the A20 westbound, and that's following an accident. In Mitcham, Cricket Green is closed eastbound for some emergency repair works. It's closed between London Road and Mitcham Park, and that's causing lengthy delays back onto the London Road. On the train, southern services are disrupted at three bridges. That's because of some safety checks. And on the underground, Lancaster Gate Station remains closed.
This is LBC.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Imagine you in a nice comfy seat with your hands behind your head, taking in the views instead of taking on the road, maybe even taking a nap. That's the bliss of getting where you need to go without worrying about driving. Book your train journey via avantiwestcoast.co.uk and we'll take you there. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £61 million. Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Chase is the digital bank that boosts your savings to 4.5% AER variable.
A boost?
Yep. It includes a 2.25% AER boost for the first 12 months.
Are they being boosted now?
All the time. Bedtime, gym time, romantic dinner time. And soon you could boost your way to...
Ah, beach time.
Boost your savings with Chase. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross interest paid monthly. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 9 minutes before eight. Let's come back to that summit that we talked about at the top of the show. The Prime Minister calling in bosses of companies such as Shell, BP, HSBC and Centrica, talking about a joint effort. More details now from Labour MP, Chief Secretary of the Treasury, James Murray. Thanks for coming on, Chief Secretary. What did the summit yesterday achieve? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. So the point of the summit yesterday was for the Prime Minister to bring together, as you said, energy companies, logistics companies, shipping companies, insurance companies, with the government, with the military, and to discuss the situation in the Middle East and make sure that we are all working together to minimise the impact of the conflict on our economy and what happens here at home.
What is the government doing?
What is the government doing? Well, tomorrow, Nick, the price, the energy price cap is coming down. And look, a lot of your listeners, if they see what's happening in the Middle East, might well see the uncertainty, see the instability, and be worried about what is going to happen to their energy bills. What they can know is that as of tomorrow, energy bills will come down rather than going up. And that will last for the next 3 months because of the energy price cap coming down. And I hope that gives people some reassurance that whatever they see on the news, whatever they see happening in the Middle East, energy bills will come down for people over the next 3 months.
Can we talk about fuel prices? Mm. What is the government doing there, Chief Secretary?
So in terms of fuel prices, the 5p reduction in fuel duty is extended until September. But there's another really important point.
It ends in September, does it?
It currently ends in September, that's correct. But can I point out one other thing, Nick, which I think a lot of your listeners might find helpful, which is the new fuel finder data, which the government has made available. Now, what this is about encouraging more competition between different petrol stations to help people get the cheapest possible fuel for their cars. And this can save people around £40 a year by shopping around. So rather than having to guess or hope that you find the right petrol station,
right,
you can actually look on an app, you can look on a website. And
do you,
you
know what they're doing elsewhere in the world, Chief Secretary?
Different governments around the world, you mean?
Yeah. So yeah. In Ireland, the reductions are between 20 and 15% regards litre of unleaded or fuel. In France, businesses will be down 20% for businesses' use held all through April. In Spain, VAT on fuel prices has been halved, saving around 25p. Portugal, similar measures. Germany, they limit price increases to one increase a day. I could go on with Poland, New Zealand and Australia. That's what those countries are doing. We've got a fuel finder website. That is pathetic, isn't it, Chief Secretary?
No, not at all.
Well, why aren't we addressing cuts in VAT or fuel excise duty?
are what they do in Poland, and they do in France, and they do in Portugal, and they do in Spain. I can take you around the world, and they're taking definitive action. And we've got a website. Seriously?
No, fuel duty is already being kept down because of the 5p cut being extended to September. That was a decision we took at the budget last year.
Have you seen the prices, Nick?
Can I just say that we knew at the budget last year, and we have known since we came into office, that the cost of living is a top priority for people in this country. That's why we took decisions at the budget last year about reducing energy bills, about extending the fuel duty freeze. Now, what is happening in the Middle East makes it even more important.
Have you seen the price of petrol and diesel, Mr. Murray?
I actually checked on Fuel Finder. I downloaded an app and checked on it on Friday because I was thinking about.
So you're aware that it's been going up. 31 days this conflict has been going on. For virtually 31 days, the price has gone up. And all the government's got is the Fuel Finder tracker. That's it.
No, that's one thing we've got.
Good. So we're going to have some real positive action on VAT or excise. Do tell me which it'll be.
So, Nick, we've already extended the fuel duty cut until September, so that's already in place.
And but these are other measures taken during the conflict.
The energy bills cut is coming in tomorrow.
But why would Ireland move during the conflict, France move during the conflict, Spain, Portugal, Germany, Poland, New Zealand, Australia, and we do nothing?
But we're not doing nothing, and it's for...
But we're not attacking the VAT or the excise duty as they are in all the other countries.
But the duty is already lower in the UK because we have decided to extend the 5p cut.
The duty is lower in the UK?
The fuel duty. Fuel duty, the 5p...
What are you talking about? It's just been cut by 20% in France. What are you talking about?
The 5p cut in fuel duty has already been extended until September. We took that decision, as well as the decision to reduce the energy price gap last November, because we knew... last November that the cost of living was a top priority for people. What is happening in the Middle East, Nick, makes the decisions that we have taken to tackle the cost of living, to bring down energy bills, even more important.
But even the RAC Foundation is saying, as regards some of the people who are driving diesel vehicles, and there's about 5 million vans, they're effectively bleeding out. Your government is not doing enough for white van man or woman, is it?
We are already doing things to bring down the cost of motoring, whether that is the extension of the fuel duty.
Road fund
cut,
goes up
whether
next
that
month.
Is fuel, whether
insurance
fuel
levy
finder.
Goes up. What are you doing to bring prices down for motorists? Petrol up, road fund up, insurance up. Do remind me. What have I missed?
Well, I'm not sure if you missed it, because I've said it a few times about this 5p reduction in fuel duty having been extended till September. But look, Nick, what we're doing, as well as the measures we're taking right now, the Prime Minister and the Chancellor are making contingency plans for what comes further down the line.
I'm sorry, Mr. Barry. The Prime Minister and the Chancellor are, according to one newspaper, welcoming £20 million a day in additional revenue through levies and taxes. That, do you recognise that figure?
Well, yes, but look, can I make an
important... So you are making an extra £20 million a day as businesses are going to the wall.
Let me make an important point here, Nick, because if the VAT receipts from energy increase... that can often be because people are spending less money on other goods and items. And that means that overall, where people pay VAT shifts from other items over to energy and fuel. Now, because energy and fuel are typically at 5% rather than the standard 20%, that can actually mean overall revenue goes down. So it's not quite as straightforward as you put out. But what is really straightforward, Nick, is that we want to make sure that we're protecting people from the instability in the Middle East. And we have already taken decisions at the budget last year to bring down the cost of living to protect people. Now that there is that instability in the Middle East, now people are worried about what's happening to energy bills, what we are doing is even more important than ever. And we're in a better position to weather what happens ahead because of the decisions we've taken already.
But Mr. Murray, according to the RAC Foundation, which is not known for its political sides or political aspect, the biggest gap between diesel and unleaded now since 2003, white van men and women and haulage firms are, quotes, bleeding cash. That's the reality. Other countries have taken action in these 31 days. You're going to point me yet again to the 5p fuel tracker that has had 5p fuel levy and the fuel finder, and no direct action.
We're doing what we think is
do,
right.
Do you agree with the RAC Foundation that white men, van men are bleeding cash just to stay on the road?
Well, I think that everyone...
They're wrong, are they?
I think everyone is facing uncertainty and worry about what's happening to the prices of energy and the cost of living as a result of what's happening in the Middle East. And the priority for us as a government...
What are you doing with the extra £20 million a day?
Nick, the priority for us is to bring down costs... But it's also to make sure that we spend money in a targeted way. Because, look, can I...
What are you doing with the extra £20 million a day?
Can I just make this point, Nick?
Yes, of course. Then if you answer my question, of course, please.
Okay, but look, it's important that any action that we take is done in a targeted way to keep the overall costs down. Because what we saw in the past was large, untargeted, unfunded interventions, which then meant we all have to still pay it back in the future because it increases debt and interest rates and inflation and so on. So it's important that we take targeted action, that we step in to help people, but we do it in a responsible way.
What are you doing with the £20 million a day that's coming in?
Well, look, Nick, you know that's not how it works. It doesn't come in on one day and you spend it the next. This is about government accounts over the course of the year. But
why is it providing relief?
Because, as I said, when people spend more money on VAT, which is charged on fuel and energy, that is quite often people's expenditure shifting.
But you just last year on this, you just don't
Nick,
seem alive to the conflict. Because all the measures you
sometimes
talk
sometimes
about...
That's sometimes people's spending shifting from other items. So people spend less on other items, so there's less VAT coming in on other purchases, but maybe more VAT coming in on the purchases of fuel and energy.
These energy
it's not quite as straightforward as you set out.
The freeze of fuel duty, energy price caps, they were all announced prior to the conflict. The government has not responded. It's hard from calling summits.
Nick, that is because we knew the cost of living was important last year.
So,
you know, we're not coming to this late.
Since the start.
We're not coming to this party late. You know, we knew that the cost of living and the cost of energy was important for people last year. Since we came into office, we have known that the cost of living is people's top priority. So we are not suddenly waking up this year and saying, right, we need to do something about the cost of living. We've already got things in train to help people with the cost of living. So the decisions the Chancellor took last year at the budget to bring down the energy price cap, to take those green levies off energy bills, to make sure people's energy bills go down. Right. That was a decision taken last year. It's coming in tomorrow, and it gives people extra reassurance, and it's even more important given the instability in the Middle East.
Last minute or so together, can I take you to France? And the officials are resisting your colleague Shabana Mahmoud's demands for targets to reduce migrant crossings. This is the original three-year deal, £475 million, struck by Rishi Sunak, I must add, comes to an end, I understand, at midnight, so there will be no deal whatsoever. What will that mean for migrant crossings, Chief Secretary?
Well, there are live negotiations going on. I'm not going to speculate about where those negotiations end. Our governments are working together on this. We'll keep talking through the negotiations, and we are, you know, we're allied with France on the outcomes we want to achieve, which is to reduce the number of small boat crossings, and so those negotiations will continue, but I'm not going to speculate any further on that.
Lastly, if resident or junior doctors ignore the Prime Minister's 48-hour deadline to call off the strike, what action will be taken?
Well, if the resident doctors ignore what the Prime Minister has said and they go ahead with the strike, it will hurt them, it will hurt the NHS, and it will hurt patients.
How will it hurt them?
Because they have a decent offer on the table. They have a very good offer on the table, which has been negotiated over many months with the Secretary of State for Health.
Yes, I do. How does it hurt them not to heed the Prime Minister's call?
Because they will not get the better deal that is on the table. They will get a less good deal by not accepting the deal which is on the table. They would benefit.
So the Daily Telegraph said that if they don't heed his call, there will be the withdrawal of an offer of thousands more NHS jobs. So the Prime Minister's way of solving it is, call off the strike, or I'll take jobs away from the NHS. Does that stack up to you, Chief Secretary?
Well, no. These were extra training places that we wanted to introduce as part of the deal.
So we won't train our doctors. We won't train the doctors. Does that make sense to you?
If the resident doctors go on strike, then our resources in April have to be focused on keeping the NHS running. But I would much rather we were spending that resource on getting more training places in place, and I would hope the resident doctors would think that would be a better way to spend that money as well. But the truth is, if these strikes go ahead, our resource, our energy, our focus is going to have to be on getting the NHS through those strikes. But there is a good offer on the table, which involves those extra training places that you mentioned, which involves a good improvement to the working lives of resident doctors. Right. You know, it is frankly reckless for the BMA committee to reject it, to not even put it to their members so the members can take their own decision, and it will be a worse outcome for resident doctors themselves as well as, of course, for patients.
Grateful for your time this morning. Business chiefs being urged to help address the economic impact and to work together with the government as outlined by Chief Secretary of the Treasury, James Murray. Thank you, Mr. Murray. 3 minutes after eight, let's get the LBC news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, resident doctors in England are being given 48 hours by the Prime Minister to call off planned strike action in England next week. Sir Keir Starmer's warned a proposed deal, including extra training posts, could be withdrawn if it goes ahead. The six-day walkout over jobs and pay is due to begin next Tuesday. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark is following developments.
Some very tough words coming from the Prime Minister today. He's written in the Times saying the strikes will damage the NHS. He's urged the BMA to formally consult their members on this government offer. Now, that's not something that's happened so far. He says walking away from this deal is the wrong decision and that no one will benefit.
The BMA says creating posts and improving patient care should not be dependent on calling off strike action. And Sir Jim Mackey, the Chief Executive Officer at NHS England, will join Nick Ferrari at breakfast shortly to take your calls live on LBC. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to chair another COBRA meeting later to discuss the conflict in the Middle East. Yesterday, Sir Keir met business leaders and said tackling the economic fallout must be a joint effort. Figures show a rise in shop price inflation as well as big increases in the cost of oil and gas. Speaking to Nick in the last few minutes, the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, dismissed claims not enough's being done to help drivers with the cost of fuel.
We are already doing things to bring down the cost of motoring, whether that is the extension of the fuel duty.
Road fund goes up next month. Insurance levy goes up. What are you doing to bring prices down for motorists? Petrol up, road fund up, insurance up. Do remind me, what have I missed?
Well, I'm not sure if you missed it, because I said it a few times about this the 5p reduction in fuel duty having been extended till September.
A fifth arrest has been made after a 16-year-old girl died after being stabbed in Leeds. Chloe Watson Dransfield was found seriously injured in the Austhorpe area on Saturday and later died in hospital. Police in England and Wales will no longer from today record what are known as non-crime hate incidents. The College of Policing says the move will make clear that lawful free speech is not a police matter. NCHIs include arguments or abuse on social media which cause harm but are not illegal. And new rules are now in force requiring councils in England to offer a weekly food waste collection to every household. The government hopes the change will boost recycling rates. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 10,127. It closed up 160 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. The odd shower in the southeast. Widespread sunny spells developing later. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Need anything from Tesco? Like a delicious whole leg of lamb? Or a succulent large beef roasting joint? Now, even better than half price this Easter with your Tesco club card. Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores and online ends 10th of April. Club card or app required. Exclusions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
7 minutes after eight, after that, on Tuesday, March the 31st, after that extended interview to effectively the Deputy Chancellor, Chief Secretary to Treasury, James Murray. And as the REC is reporting, white van men and women and haulage firms are bleeding cash. The government is doing bleeding nothing to help you, just blathering on. That is the reality. And I put to Mr. Murray, James Murray, what other countries in the world are doing to help their citizens and try and keep their businesses running. So yeah. In Ireland, the reductions are between 20 and 15% regards litre of unleaded or fuel. In France, businesses will be down 20% for businesses' use, held all through April. In Spain, VAT on fuel prices has been halved, saving around 25p. Portugal, similar measures. Germany, they limit price increases to one increase a day. I could go on with Poland, New Zealand and Australia. That's what those countries are doing. We've got a fuel finder website. That is pathetic, isn't it, Chief Secretary?
No, not at all. Look,
well, why aren't we addressing cuts in VAT or fuel excise duty? What they do in Poland, and they do in France, and they do in Portugal, and they do in Spain. I can take you around the world, and they're taking definitive action. And we've got a website? Seriously?
fuel duty is already being kept down because of the 5p cut being extended to September. That was a decision we took at the budget last year.
Have you seen the prices, Nick?
Can I just say that we knew at the budget last year, and we have known since we came into office, that the cost of living is a top priority for people in this country. That's why we took decisions at the budget last year about reducing energy bills, about extending the fuel duty freeze. Now, what is happening in the Middle East makes it even more important.
Have you seen the price of petrol and diesel, Mr. Murray? I actually
checked on Fuel Finder. I downloaded an app and checked on it on Friday because I was thinking about.
So you're aware that it's been going up. 31 days this conflict has been going on. Virtually 31 days the price has gone up. And all the government's got is the Fuel Finder tracker.
No, that's one thing we've got.
Good. So we're going to have some real positive action on VAT or excise. Do tell me which it'll be.
So, Nick, we've already extended the fuel duty cut until September, so that's already in place.
And but these are other measures taken during the conflict.
The energy bills cut is coming in tomorrow.
But why would Ireland move during the conflict, France move during the conflict, Spain, Portugal, Germany, Poland, New Zealand, Australia, and we do nothing?
But we're not doing nothing, and it's for.
But we're not attacking the VAT or the excise duty as they are in all the other countries.
But the duty is already lower in the UK because we have decided to extend the 5p cut.
The duty is lower in the UK.
The fuel duty. Fuel duty. The 5p.
What are you talking about? It's just been cut by 20% in France. What are you talking about?
The 5p cut in fuel duty has already been extended until September. We took that decision, as well as the decision
Poland
to reduce the energy price gap last November, because we knew last November that the cost of living was a top priority for people. What is happening in the Middle East, Nick, makes the decisions that we have taken to tackle the cost of living, to bring down energy bills, even more important.
But even the IRAC Foundation is saying, as regards some of the people who are driving diesel vehicles, and there's about 5 million vans, they are effectively bleeding out. Your government is not doing enough for white van man or woman, is it?
We are already doing things to bring down the cost of motoring, whether that is the extension of the fuel duty.
Road fund
cut,
goes up
whether
next
that
month.
Is fuel, whether
insurance
fuel
levy
finder.
Goes up. What are you doing to bring prices down for motorists? Petrol up, road fund up, insurance up. Do remind me, what have I missed?
Well, I'm not sure if you missed it, because I've said it a few times about this 5p reduction fuel duty having been extended till September. But look, Nick, what we're doing, as well as the measures we're taking right now, the Prime Minister and the Chancellor are making contingency plans for what comes further down the line.
I'm sorry, Mr. Barry. The Prime Minister and the Chancellor are, according to one newspaper, welcoming £20 million a day in additional revenue through levies and taxes. That, do you recognise that figure?
Yes, but look, can I make an
important... So you are making an extra £20 million a day as businesses are going to the wall.
Let me make an important point here, Nick, because if the VAT receipts from energy increase, that can often be because people are spending less money on other goods and items. And that means that overall, where people pay VAT shifts from other items over to energy and fuel. Now, because energy and fuel are typically at 5% rather than the standard 20%, that can actually mean overall revenue goes down. So it's not quite as straightforward as you put out. But what is really straightforward, Nick, is that we want to make sure that we're protecting people from the instability in the Middle East. And we have already taken decisions at the budget last year to bring down the cost of living to protect people. Now that there is that instability in the Middle East, now people are worried about what's happening to energy bills, what we are doing is even more important than ever, and we're in a better position to weather what happens ahead because of the decisions we've taken already.
But Mr. Murray, according to the RAC Foundation, which is not known for its political political sides or political aspect, the biggest gap between diesel and unleaded now since 2003, white van men and women and haulage firms are, quotes, bleeding cash. That's the reality. Other countries have taken action in these 31 days. You're going to point me yet again to the 5p fuel tracker, that has 5p fuel levy and the fuel finder, and no direct action.
We're doing what we think is
right. Do you agree with the RAC Foundation that white men, van men are bleeding cash just to stay on the road?
Well, I think that everyone...
They're wrong, are they?
I think everyone is facing uncertainty and worry about what's happening to the prices of energy and the cost of living as a result of what's happening in the Middle East. And the priority for us as a government...
What are you doing with the extra £20 million a day?
Nick, the priority for us is to bring down costs, but it's also to make sure that we spend money in a targeted way. Because, look, can I...
What are you doing with the extra £20 million a day?
Can I just make this point, Nick?
Yes, of course. Then if you answer my question, of course, please.
Okay, but look, it's important that any action that we take is done in a targeted way to keep the overall costs down. Because what we saw in the past was large, untargeted, unfunded interventions, which then meant we all have to still pay it back in the future because it increases debt and interest rates and inflation and so on. So it's important that we take targeted action, that we step in to help people, but we do it in a responsible way.
Well, that was James Murray. Let's see what you make of that at 14 after 8. Sophia's in Cardiff. What did you take from that, Sophia? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think it's absolutely disgusting he's actually gone on radio to say that. I'm a driver. I'm a disabled driver. Mm-hmm. I rely on my car to get to work every day to pay these extortionate prices that I am at the moment on bills. And he can sit there saying about a 5p levy being cut until
which was in place
September.
Before the crisis, by the way. Which was in place before the crisis. Yeah.
Exactly. And now that there's a crisis such as this, and he's not doing any... Well, the government is not doing anything at all. It's not being reflected on the pump. You know, last week it was 144 my local Tesco's. Today is 148. I mean, how far is it going to go until people are going to say no more?
Let me ask you this, Sophia. His argument is because the government is, he would claim, driving down costs in other areas, that increase in fuel somehow is mitigated by that. How would you respond to that suggestion?
Well, it's not been shown. Where are these cuts? Where? I mean, my bank account doesn't say these cuts at all. You know, I'm working...
He'd talk about the energy price cap and he'd talk about the fuel that's fit. Again, all these measures brought in prior to the Iranian conflict, but he'd talk about those measures. Go on,
Yeah, exactly. This is before something as terrible as what's happened. And now this has happened. Shouldn't the government be there for the people who pay all these taxes, who work every day so hard, and they want something back? They want someone to protect them, and we're not feeling protected at the moment at all.
I know exactly how you feel, Sophia. Thank you. Let's go a minute late to the news, get more in on this. Dade is in Burton-on-Trent. Dade, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think from your frustration talking to whoever you were talking to, the
James
guy
Murray.
That was living in last year and not the current year.
Oh, that's a fair point. Yeah.
It's just, it's oblivious. He sounds like a skipping record, or we've cut it by 5p up until September, and they still haven't announced whether they're going to keep it cut or keep it. They're going to let it rise. It's absolutely diabolical, and
what
I just want to thank
find...
you.
Sorry, Colm. Oh, don't.
I just want to thank you for relaying our frustrations.
No, well, that's what I'm here for, to relay how you feel. People feel. What do you find most frustrating currently, Dade?
He's living in la-la land. Mm. Oh, the 5p cut. Even with the increases, the 5p cut doesn't mean anything. The increases are going up week on week, and we're still feeling it. And these cuts everywhere else, like your previous caller said, where are they? Because people at the minute, it's ridiculous. They haven't got no money, and they want to talk about growth and everything with your previous callers. If companies are going to feel the effect, they're going to have a knock-on effect by not employing anyone. The with the wages increasing, everything, all the costs are rising.
Same everywhere. Dave, thank you for your kind words about the show. Safe driving to you. I must get on because we're already late to the news. And coming up after the news, Radio Silence, one of the big BBC radio stars, Scott Mills. He's been fired. This, of course, takes the conflicts now from Strictly Come Dancing all the way to News at 10. Outgoing Director General of the BBC, Tim Davies, speaking last year.
We're not mucking around now. You have to be clear, and to the earlier point, you have to be fair. But if you're not living the values, it is clear you leave the BBC or there are consequences.
We're not mucking around now. So clearly you were mucking around prior to that, were you? The story behind that scandal and your level of confidence in the Beeb after this. It's 8:17 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister has warned thousands of new NHS training places could be scrapped if resident doctors go ahead with strike action in England next week. Speaking to Nick, the Chief Secretary to the Treasury has dismissed claims not enough's being done to help drivers with rising fuel costs due to the Iran war. And police in England and Wales will no longer record from today what are known as non-crime hate incidents. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, the odd shower in the southeast, widespread sunny spells developing later, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise just after Junction 6 at Godstone. It's because a car's broken down and there are delays all the way back past the Clackett Lane services. Also on the M25, there are queues anti-clockwise from Junction 25 at the A10 to 24 at Porter's Bar. It was after a car broke down earlier, but it was already very busy on that stretch after an accident earlier this morning. In Lewisham, there are delays. The A20 remains closed westbound at Gerrard Street following an accident. And also in Mitcham Cricket Green is closed eastbound, and that's for emergency repair works. In Enfield, very busy on the A10 northbound at Carter Hatch Lane, and that's where a car's broken down and one lane is closed.
This is LBC.
Imagine sweeping through green fields, floating 5 feet above ground. Sun on your face as you slide by, on track to your destination. Not a care in the world, as you simply lean back. And before you know it, you're there. This is how travel should feel. And on our trains, it does. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £61 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
21 minutes after 8. Andy, coming to you as the next caller. Just a couple of messages. Take, there's a lot coming in, but from the top of the pile, Graham and Bushy. James Murray really instills confidence in what this government is doing over the fuel crisis. Lucy and Bishop Stortford, I'm embarrassed by this MP. How dare he say Labour are taking action to tackle the cost of living? I voted Labour. They've done nothing to bring my bills down as a single working mother. They are clueless. John in Cambridge, that was a pathetic response by James Murray. Other countries are cutting VAT, as you pointed out. We have a website that allows you to shop around. It's frankly laughable. I voted Labour at the general election, but never again. Andy's in Chelsea. What do you do for a living, Andy? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm a van driver. I'm a courier.
How's that working out?
Rather expensive at the moment, as I said to your staff there. Mm. My fuel bill last week was £240. For diesel.
What was it 30 days ago?
I was paying 142 at the pump. I'm now paying about 185.
So the increase is, what, somewhere in the region of about 40, 50 quid then, roughly, is it? Roughly?
Yeah.
So that £40 a year that the Chief Secretary says you can save on Fuel Finder, one tank load wipes that out for you, Andy?
Yeah, it doesn't even touch the sides.
Unbelievable.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. I mean, if it carries on like this, I will have to start refusing distance jobs, which is how I make more money, like most couriers. The further we go, the more we make. But I just can't keep up with the fuel bill. I really can't.
Do you think the government's doing enough?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's just waffle what I've heard. There's no direct action. You know, we need help now so that we can keep driving. Without us drivers, if food doesn't get delivered, drinks don't get delivered, parcels.
So lastly, when I point to the Chief Secretary of the Treasury, who is effectively the Deputy Chancellor, the action taken in Ireland with cutting the cost of the litre, the action cut in France, businesses fixed prices all through April, Spain, Portugal, New Zealand, Australia, virtually the rest of the world, and he responds with the fuel finder and measures that are already in place prior to the conflict. How do you react, Andy?
It's just they do nothing. They just sit back, sit on their hands. The other governments are helping their people with the trouble we're in. We get a fuel finder app. You know, I can do that myself by driving around as I go, see petrol stations, and I dive in for the cheapest one. I need money off, you know, the yep. price of fuel, so I can take money home instead of spending it on diesel.
The only people taking money home are the Treasury. £20 million a day and not prepared to yield a cent. And I will say again, governments around the rest of the world are. Andy, thank you. Nick in East Dulwich, the impact for you, Nick. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Oh, John Ball, Nick here. So
good to have you on.
I had to laugh. I've got to laugh on the radio, Nick. I wasn't going to scream profanity at it. So these line ministers, right? There's 2 points that just 2 points I'm going to bring up. One, he said people are saving money elsewhere to counteract the economy increases and stuff. The reason they're doing that is because they can't afford to buy extra bits and pieces or pieces where they used to.
Yeah.
Secondly, he was banging on about if you reduce the fuel levy even more, like they are in France, Portugal, all them sort of places, then the debt goes elsewhere. Well, hang on a second. This extra is extra above the norm that they're making because of they put it up above what they should be doing. So this is extra money that they're doing. And just to put it in again, let's give them the benefit of the doubt a little bit. Let us say that 20 million, let's reduce the levy enough so they're only making 10 million. At least that would be a something for our steel people.
I absolutely agree. And what a gesture that would be. I mean, it's still going to be worth somewhere in the region of £1.5 billion if it were to continue. So it's multi-million pounds. And what a gesture it would be. Nick, thank you. More on that to come. Let's go to other matters. And Radio Silence, one of BBC Radio's big stars. Yes, Scott Mills sacked sensationally, really, yesterday, just minutes after one newspaper, the Daily Mirror, broke it online. Now, speaking last year about no shortage of scandals, everything you like from Glastonbury to News at 10, or the 10 o'clock news, outgoing Director General of the BBC, Tim Davey.
We're not mucking around now. You have to be clear, and to the earlier point, you have to be fair. But if you're not living the values, it is clear you leave the BBC, or there are consequences.
Well, it's a good job they're not mucking about now. Clearly they were before then. To Chris Bannett-Vallor, who's former Director of Standards at Ofcom, now an independent media consultant sitting on the Sky News board, also Channel 4's online independent complaints reviewer. Well, we've certainly seen a change of pace. Will this be enough? Does this look like the new streamlined BBC? Are we trying to clear the decks for the incoming Matt Britton next month? I'm so sorry, in May. Good morning.
Good morning. We don't know, do we? Because how quickly did they work on the Scott Mills? It might turn out in the next few weeks that they were acted very, very quickly. We might find out that they dawdled, but he's certainly got an in tray, or more like a filing cabinet, to deal with when he comes in.
What does he need to do? The former boss of Google, you could say it's another area where it's going to be more editorial than it is new tech.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting appointment. And I think, you know, one of the things that people have been raising an eyebrow over is his editorial experience. So, I mean, I think he's going to have to get a deputy DG pretty quickly. The other things he'll have to get is a new head of news. Of course, the last one left after the Trump interview and the Prescott memo scandal. So he's got a lot of work to do. And then you put behind that also the charter review, which needs to be sorted out by the end of the year. And so there are a lot of things in his in tray.
As someone who's been around the industry for quite a few years, Chris, how surprised were you by the appointment of Matt Britton, not an editorial figure? I don't mean this in a disparaging fashion, but more of a tech bro than an editorial figure.
Not totally surprised. I mean, one of the biggest challenges for the BBC is the digital future. And they need a leader who really can sort the organisation out. And Tim Davey did a lot of good things. I think they need to take it to the next level. So it doesn't surprise me. Having said that, we always know that editorial gets them in the end, whether it's Channel 4 or whether it's the BBC. You know, last year, as you mentioned, we had the Trump interview, we had Gaza documentary, we had BAFTA, we've had Glastonbury. So it's quite often that the editorial gets them. So if he doesn't have the editorial experience, he'll have to get a deputy under him who certainly does.
Grateful for your time, Chris. Thank you. Chris Bannett-Vallor is former Director of Standards at Ofcom, now an independent media consultant sitting on the Sky News board, also with Channel 4 as the online independent complaints reviewer. You still happy to pay your licence fee? Where do the scandals end? Strictly Come Dancing, which is almost like a crime scene. Hugh Edwards on the 10 o'clock news. You got Greg Wallace on, what was it, MasterChef or whatever it's called. I mean, everywhere you look, you still got confidence in the BBC? You're still telling me it's value for money? And a boss comes in who's no editorial experience whatsoever. That would be like me getting to run the English National Ballet. It would be quite, well, quite enjoy it. It would be quite absurd, wouldn't it? Let's talk fuel prices, whether the government is doing enough, should it be doing more. Dan's in Portsmouth. Dan, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Grand. Well, I'm a little bit angry because I think there could be more help given to folk like who are out there. Bleeding out or whatever it is, as the RAC just called it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So a quick backstory. So I'm 30 years old. I'm a HGV driver. I've done it for probably about 4 years, and I currently work within the heavy haulage industry. So first point, obviously, regarding the construction industry, it's on its knees,
right,
for starters. Not only that, obviously, with diesel going up and everything else, it is going to bankrupt industry. It's really concerning. So I'm probably burning anywhere between £700 and £800 a day.
Whoa.
In fuel. And to hear that is now basically almost 50% tax is disgusting. It infuriates me. And also hearing that other countries around the world are doing their bit to help, what are we going to be doing about it? Absolutely nothing.
How embarrassing is it, from Australia and New Zealand through most, it would appear, most of Europe, each government, each and every government doing something, whether it's a cut in excise duty. I quite like the idea that in France, if you're running a business, you're not allowed to put your increases in diesel up through the whole of April. You just have to prove legitimately that you're a business, and we're doing nothing.
It makes my head wobble. I really don't know what the government is doing to sit quite perfectly on their round, plump bottoms to do absolutely nothing about helping out the working class, which need the help more than ever. And that's let alone the fuel prices, energy crisis that we're going through.
Lastly, James Murray would say, but we've got measures in place that are saving you money elsewhere, so that mitigates the increase in fuel, is what Mr. Murray and the government would say. Quick response, Dan.
Step out in the real world, big boy.
Step out in the real world, big boy, for James Musk. Safe driving, Dan. Thank you. Now, the government also focuses in the next story. It's a deadline to doctors stop that strike action. That's from the Prime Minister, backed up, I'm sure, by his senior colleague, Health Secretary Wes Streeting, who said just last week,
I said this was the best and final offer. We are at a point where the resident doctors' committee's expectations are beyond reasonable and realistic.
Chief Executive of NHS England, Sir Jim Mackey, will join us after this upcoming news to take your calls. 8:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Treasury has pushed back on claims not enough's being done to protect drivers from rising costs due to the Iran war. James Murray has told Nick this morning measures such as the fuel duty freeze and the Fuel Finder website are already helping to lower motoring costs. Resident doctors in England are being given 48 hours by the Prime Minister to call off planned strike action next week. Sir Keir Starmer's warned a proposed deal, including extra training posts, could be withdrawn if it goes ahead. And police in England and Wales will no longer record what are known as non-crime hate incidents. Officials say the change has been made in a bid to end the policing of everyday arguments which don't cross a criminal threshold. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. The odd shower in the southeast. Some widespread sunny spells developing by the afternoon. A high of 16 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I suspect there might be a lot of other people who bring forward claims of not dissimilar nature to try and show, too, that these social media sites, the manner in which they are delivered to you, inspires a behaviour that could lead to some very, very disastrous consequences for you. The door is now open to a court deciding that, yes, in this 20-year-old woman's case, was true. The use of social media early made her addicted and her depression worse.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on, with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus, T's and C's apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases and a loss of value have left many holiday park homeowners feeling misled, angry and trapped. The Holiday Park Advice Centre can help claim back any money you're owed. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ADVICE to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34, and it's another day, as is often the case, where health and health matters are not far from the headlines. Indeed, for two of your newspapers' front page, it is the main headline. For the Telegraph, Starmer's 48-hour ultimatum to doctors. What lies behind that? Well, in a moment, you'll have your opportunity to put your questions to our next guest, but I'm going to start with that with Sir Jim Mackey, who's Chief Executive Officer at NHS England. We've already had a brief conversation. He's asked me to call him Jim, so I will, as you've offered me that opportunity. I wouldn't normally be so forward, but OK, Jim it is, or Mr. Mackey. Anyway, Sir Jim, this ultimatum, how is it going? How is it constructed? What do you hope it will lead to? Morning to you, and thanks for coming in.
Yeah, morning. Good to see you. So we've spent a lot of time over recent weeks just trying to reach agreement with the BMA and Resident Doctors Committee. We thought we'd manage to get to that point a couple of weeks ago with great work on both sides, really good spirited, jointly produced a package that we thought would be manageable for everybody. Difficult in the financial climate, but manageable. And we're all very disappointed when the decision was made last week to reject it and then immediately go to strikes. That said, it's not over yet. There's still, colleagues will meet today and we really hope that we can reach agreement because it's been very, very, very disruptive for everybody. And also, really concerned about the NHS needs to be there for the population. So this disconnect with the population has been the big concern that we've had over recent years.
If an ultimatum is given, normally there is a consequence if you don't meet that ultimatum. What do you understand that to be from the Prime Minister, Jim?
So there's the big element of the package that's been referred to today by the PM is the jobs office. So this is always about pay and jobs. We're as far as we could by trying to create extra training places for resident doctors. And that is the bit that I think would have to come off the table if we couldn't reach agreement.
How many extra places were there?
So it was 4,000 extra, up to 4,000 extra jobs over the period of the deal.
And in fact, the first call is going to be about this. So last question from me. How does that make sense, Jim, that if you don't meet our ultimatum, we're going to cancel training? I mean, that can't make sense
it's not
for the future.
It's not cancelling training. There has been an expansion over recent years.
Right.
But with all, the government's already taken action on prioritising UK graduates to give resident doctors, UK graduates, a better chance of getting training slots.
Right.
And this is an expansion of the overall training system. There has also been a really big expansion in recent years of what we'd call locally employed doctors who aren't officially training positions.
So you were aware of this ultimatum. Number 10 did let you know it was coming down the line.
I wasn't personally aware of it, no. But when you we'd had lots of discussions.
Are you supportive of taking away those 4,000 places? You are supportive of that?
I'd rather we just reached agreement, to be honest. I think that's the ideal position. There's still a chance. My preference would be,
of course,
colleagues getting the room sorted out.
Of course.
But the reality is that those doctors, those extra training places cost money.
Yes.
If we're going to be spending money on managing industrial action, pay other colleagues extra to cover shifts, that money will disappear.
It's a necessity from the log. If the logjam stays, you really don't have an option cash-wise.
Yeah,
absolutely. I see. Let's get a doctor involved. Farouk is in Maidstone in Kent. Are you a resident doctor, Farouk? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, I am a resident doctor.
Okay.
Currently, yeah.
You're through to Sir Jim Mackey. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Sir Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I think the main thing I'm concerned about is why are the training places even being used as a bargaining chip? I think they should be completely separate. I think, as you know, NHS waiting lists are at an all-time high and corridor care is also eminent in most hospitals across the UK. surely by reducing training numbers, you're reducing future consultants of the future, and that's a catch-22 where you'll be in this negative cycle where there's less consultants of the future because there's less training posts. It works well in everyone's interest if we have more training posts, because at the end of the day, you'll have more consultants, and more consultants means more doctors to see patients.
Yeah, thanks, Farouk. So the and really good point. As I said earlier, ideally we want to reach agreement on the whole package, and colleagues had worked really hard on trying to get the balance right of extra pay and an expansion of training places. We are limited by the overall amount of money that we've got, though. So the NHS is a big part of public spending, as we talk about a lot, over £200 billion. And there has actually been a really big expansion of the consultant workforce over the last few years as well. So the training places are part of that. We're right on the outer edges of what's affordable and achievable to provide people good training, but we're confident we can do it. And it is just the necessary part of normal negotiations that things get tied together and traded off against each other.
But to Farouk's point, aren't we just making more problems down the line, surely, Jim?
So as I've said before, Nick, we've had a big expansion in the consultant workforce in recent years. We've also had a growth in workload, but not in keeping with the expansion in the workforce. If we go too far in creating too many training slots, we'll find it hard to find people consultant jobs at the end of the process. So it's a very, very finely balanced system. And on the bit about whether it's right or wrong for them to be withdrawn, it's just the, you know, a necessity of the thing being financially constrained. If we're paying money to cover strike action, the money has to come from somewhere.
Let's bring Farouk. Farouk, just a point from... Go on, yeah, sorry, go ahead and then I'll come back. Farouk.
There was a Lancet article that I was reading based on the current working model which was done, and there's a prediction that by 2048 we'd be 11 to 15,000 consultants short based on population. So I think part of the increase was to increase medical student places. However, if we're then increasing medical student places but we don't have the jobs to train them, we'll still have the shortfall of the consultant. And I see that on a day-to-day basis. You know, I can see on a day-to-day basis clinics getting cancelled because there's no consultant to take the clinic, or patients waiting up to 12 hours because there's no consultant to do, for example, a post-take ward round. So I think these are really, really key patient safety, which isn't being painted in the media. I think in the media, doctors are being painted as, you know, they just want more money, but actually the jobs is quite an important part too.
Farouk, before I let Sir Jim respond to that, just briefly, and I will ask the Chief Executive Officer of the NHS England to respond, I just want to put to you what Wes Streeting would be saying, which is for the most experienced resident doctors, basic pay would have increased to 77,348. First-year doctors out of medical school, £52,000 a year, 12,000 more than 3 years ago. It does seem like a lot of money to other industries and other professions. Farouk.
Sure, but I think, Nick, as we've been telling about the pay, I think we're still under a real terms pay erosion from 2008. And until
so is everyone, Farouk. That's not unique to doctors.
The erosion that doctors have felt over that period of time with the increased workload that doctors had to take because of the decreased amount of staff, okay. I think that real terms pay is felt a lot more in the pocket than
others. Okay, quick response to patient safety, if you would. Jim?
Yeah, so on the patient safety thing, Farouk's rightly mentioned that we haven't been delivering the standards that we would all wanted to be delivering on corridors or outpatient productivity or waiting times, whatever it is. So we're taking action to deal with that, and hopefully we'll cover that a bit more in the next few questions as well. The reality is, though, we've had a very, very big expansion of the workforce compared to 2019. And a marginal increase in workload, which is when people talk about the challenges we've got, that is one of our challenges. So we as you roll that forward and then technology gets more adopted and enabled in the NHS and we shift models of care, it should be the case that we can manage within the forecasts that we've got.
Thanks Farouk, let's stay within the NHS. Claire is in Cambridge. Claire, what do you do? You're in the NHS, is that right? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Yes, so my name's Claire. I'm working in hospital pharmacy and I have been for years now. I just want to recap with my colleague Farouk there. I totally agree with what he was saying. In pharmacy, we use calculated research methods to calculate our staffing frameworks and tools based on the two workload staffing needs, the methodologies
I'm going to have to move you to your question, Claire, because we're missing a couple of words. So if you can, if I could just ask you to get straight to your question. I'm sorry, Claire, the line isn't the greatest in the world. Go ahead. No, not your fault.
So basically, my question is, what are you going to do to ensure that I've got the staff and the training? Because at the moment, we've got recruitment freezes and we're struggling to provide services.
OK. And thanks, Claire. Stay on the line for the answer. Jim.
So we're in this position, Claire, that we've got pressure all over the service, and colleagues in every description would describe the situation you've described, where everybody feels the need for more people. I think that's largely down to the complexity of patients that we've got in where we are demographically in post-COVID. The facts are, though, we've had across most disciplines a very big increase in workforce since 2019-20, with a marginal increase in workload over that time. So what colleagues locally are having to work through is how they get that balance right. You described a tool there that your profession uses. We've got similar tools in nursing and in other disciplines to give an indication as to what workforce should be required over the future. And they are actively used in organisations. But you're probably feeling the effects of this year, a correction of just trying to get the resources back into line with where they need to be relative to workload.
How can you get, if there's a recruitment freeze, how is Claire and others in the NHS to achieve that?
So we'll go back 12 months, Nick. We had a forecast deficit into the financial year of £4.5 billion. Which wasn't sustainable, so that has had to be corrected. And every year for about the last 10, the NHS has needed a bailout during the year. This is the first year in 10 years we've not had to do that. So colleagues this year have been working really hard to just get things settled again.
But Jim, I don't know if you had sight of the Guardian newspaper yesterday. Front page, the NHS in England, you're the chief executive officer, is set to miss key targets to shorten waiting times for cancer care, being treated in A&E and planned hospital treatment, leaving millions of patients facing long delays. The health service will not deliver on a series of milestone improvements in its performance that ministers have demanded it achieve by the time the fiscal year ends today.
So what I can say on that, Nick, that's based on analysis at month 10. And since then, the NHS has reduced the waiting list every week over the last 11. This is on management information, not published statistics yet.
Are you going to deliver on those targets?
As of today, we're 0.2% adrift on the elective standard target for the end of March, with still a week and a bit to go in the reported statistics.
Waiting times, cancer care and the issues.
Yes, so okay. We're going to be very, very, very close at the year end is what I would say.
So that's unnecessarily gloomy. That's not allowing you effectively
It reports a fact at those statistics, which is just around, you know, post-Christmas. It's always a bit difficult post-Christmas at the height of winter. And then we've made massive improvements across the service since then on waiting times.
All right. Claire, thank you for the work you do. Kay's in Edgware. Kay, your question to Sir Jim and Mackie. Go ahead. Claire, Kay, can you hear me? Kay, go ahead.
Yeah, I can hear you. So I've just got a very simple question. I've been waiting for a hernia surgery for over a year now, and I haven't received any kind of correspondence to say how long I'm going to continue to wait for that. So just simply, I want to ask, how are you going to ensure patients like myself get the care that they deserve, at least the very least, the correspondence to let me know what's going on, because I haven't heard anything for over 13 months.
Just a reminder, what month last year was it then that this all started for you, lastly, Kay?
It was last year, the ending of February, beginning of March.
Just over 12 months. This comes back to these waiting lists again, doesn't it, Jim?
Yeah. So sorry to hear that, Kay. If you could drop me an email with some more detail, I'll look into it for you.
Yeah.
And apologies for the wait. We are now really trying to build the mechanisms whereby patients can be communicated with regularly whilst they're waiting. So that can take the form of texts, emails, messages through the NHS app or the patient portal, regular phone calls from local contacts, etc. So every NHS organisation should be doing that. We still do hear, and I hear of patients who've been referred in and don't know where they are or are struggling to find out. But most organisations now have that capability. So I'll take your details if it's possible, and we'll come back to you.
Yeah, stay on the line. We'll exchange details with one of Sir Jim's staff. Talking about treatment for Kay and others, you'll be aware a record number of overseas trained doctors are quitting the UK. In all, 4,880 doctors who qualified in another country left the UK during 2024, the last year for which we have figures, a rise of 26%. Why are we losing these doctors?
So the NHS has to have a limit on how many doctors it has and needs. We've actually become very attractive in over the last 10 years or so in terms of international graduates with huge competition for jobs. It goes back to your earlier points about resident doctors. And then what we're hearing from UK graduates was a concern that they couldn't get training places because of international doctors. It is an international workforce and an international marketplace. But it's very, very, very complicated when you work through from medical school into training places into consultant roles at the end of it. And I think it's fair to say we've just got a bit out of sync in recent years about supply and demand, and it's still correcting itself and settling itself down.
Wes Streeting spoke about an unfortunate return to 1970s and 80s style racism in Britain, where, I quote, it's socially acceptable to be racist. That must surely influence some doctors. I don't particularly want to stay here if I'm given rather offensive names.
I think it is a factor, and we do see in our staff surveys evidence of the abuse that staff have to put up.
This is presumably black Asian staff predominantly.
It's definitely a big problem for us. And across the NHS, colleagues are trying to deal with that. It's a horrible. I've seen it in real life myself as a chief exec. I remember when I was running a hospital, a very, very good outpatient nurse, a black nurse, who being horribly racially abused, and the management team, her colleagues, dealt with it, and the patient was dealt with and excluded, etc. It's horrible. Nobody should have to put up with that.
No.
But sadly, it has been a factor of life in the NHS in recent years.
Let's go to another call. Hayley's in Lancaster. Hayley, you're through to Sir Jim Mackey. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Jim. So, I'm Jewish, and while I have to say my local hospital are absolutely amazing, I recently received care. They were wonderful. That said, I would never, ever tell them that I'm Jewish. And the reason is that I have no way of knowing, bearing in mind all the instances of things that have happened in the last couple of years, whether knowing that would potentially affect my care that I receive. So the question I'd want to ask you is, what training is now being given to all NHS staff on understanding the contemporary nature of anti-Semitism? And now that Wes Streeting has empowered both the NHS and the GMC to accelerate the process of sacking and striking off staff members found to be racist, what's being done to ensure that anti-Semitic bias doesn't affect that process?
I'm really sorry about what you've described. No one should have to worry in the way that you worry about how you might be treated because of race, religion, or, you know, whatever.
Well, Streeting told us last week some Jewish patients don't say they need kosher food because they're so nervous it could identify.
Yeah,
that's wholly unacceptable.
It is wholly unacceptable and really terrible. So across the NHS, there is training in place through the mandatory training system where colleagues are trained in these things and from all angles as well, just so that nobody is discriminated against and differentiated against. And we're just trying to keep keep that up to date and in tune and in line with what's going on in society. It is very hard to get your head around why it's necessary in a caring profession where everybody actually comes in to just look after people regardless of what their background is, what their racial background is, religious background or whatever. But we're working very hard nationally and across the service to make sure the training in place can keep up to date with all of that.
Thank you, Hayley. Good luck as and when you next require treatment. We've referenced Corridor Care, and I've talked about Wes Streeting. He told me on this show in December of last year, Corridor Care in English hospitals will be ended by the next general election, if not sooner.
Yeah.
Would you concur?
Yeah, we're working really, really hard on this.
Would you agree,
by the next
election, it will be gone?
I would hope so, yeah. So
hope is not right. Will it be gone? So Jim Mackey.
We'll give it a right go to get rid of it. And it is a horrible example of standards that should never have been reduced in that way, but had been, and had been normalised in several places across the NHS. It is clustered into probably about 30 organisations, not every organisation in the NHS. And about a month ago, we had a session in London with the Corridor Care Alliance, which was aimed at just just eliminating it. Led by a bunch of organisations that had actually done that, that confronted it, that accepted that it was unacceptable, that ignored all the complexity of all the modelling that suggested it would take years to solve, and that actually just fixed it. So a really good example being West Hart's, the hospital in Watford, where they'd really had a big problem and determined locally to deal with it. What we now need to do is just make sure that happens right across the NHS.
Let's go to some of the questions that are coming in via email and text. Sharon in Wimbledon says, you've talked a lot about overseas doctors leaving the country. What about doctors we train in the UK leaving here? It costs tens of thousands of pounds. Why should we allow so many foreign doctors to, so many doctors to leave for foreign countries? Shouldn't they have to give a certain amount of time, like 5 years?
Yeah, so this has been kicked around a bit in recent years. As all,
how much does it cost to train a doctor?
I'd be guessing on a number, but it's hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Is it really?
It's very.
Shouldn't we limit him or her to 5, 6, 10 years service in the UK?
Yeah, well, so when I trained as an accountant, when I was a trainee, it was part of my contract. That if I left during the training process, I repaid the fees.
Why don't we
stuff.
Have that in the NHS, Jim?
So there's advice taken a few years ago that said it was possibly unlawful to do it and very, very difficult to do. So what I'd really like is that we've got the balance right of UK graduates having a good education here, loving the NHS because they're being looked after well, they can see career prospects, and they don't feel the need to go abroad. That said, it's always been an international endeavour. The whole time I've been in the NHS, colleagues have described how they've been abroad for experience but come back. And a lot of these young people who are going abroad really still want to come back. We've got to make sure that the service is set up for them to really value them and make it the best option for them to come back to.
Sam, you're the next caller. Let's take one last one from the emails. This is Freddie in Brixton. What contingency planning is underway for medicine shortages in the NHS? Freddie cites the UK imports 75% of its medicine, with obviously the fuel blockages that we're seeing elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
What measures are being taken?
So that's a really good question. We are really worried about this. We've already had a couple of supply shocks in the last 12, 18 months or so of key supplies. Recently, one with Stryker products because of something else.
Stryker products?
It's a brand of products, theatre products, etc. So
what do they supply? What is a Stryker product?
Largely theatre supplies, so it's instruments. Yeah. So, and we've had other examples in recent years. So we've got a team stood up in NHS England across the NHS to focus on where the risks might be through the supply chains, a cross-government process, working out into NHS organisations.
So is
as well.
It across drugs and kit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Specifically, what areas apart from kit?
Well, everything's at risk.
Is that right? 75% of our medicines are imported.
We import a lot of medicines, but we are. It's an international system, the NHS, healthcare. So the supply chain is very, very international.
I mean, how much supply do we have? How many days or months or weeks in reserve do we have?
It depends what you're talking about. In every area, we've got enough to get through for a reasonable period.
What's a reasonable period? I'm a journalist. So generally,
a few weeks. But you wouldn't. Because
well, it goes off as well, presumably.
Because things perish and it costs money to store, and various other things go out of use. You can't hold years and years of supply.
Of course.
So generally, depending on the product, we keep a reasonable period, and some of that's held centrally and locally. People will be making decisions.
But in some instances, it will be weeks worth of supply.
Yeah, it could be days for some products.
Worth of supply.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I said Sam would be the next caller. Sam, where are you? Southampton. You're on the radio. Sam, good morning.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to ask Jim why they've cancelled all treatment for transgender children, especially those transgender children who are already on a medical pathway. There's no direction. We've been given no information on what the next steps in the processes are. We've just been left in complete limbo.
Yeah.
And this is you personally, is it? Do you mind? Can you just give me a little more detail?
Yeah, I've got a 17-year-old child who's been part of the system since she was 5 years old.
I see.
She started her medical pathway through the guidance.
And this has now been cancelled, has it, Sam?
So she's still on a medical pathway, but any progression and moving forward has been cancelled on a pause. So, and she's been on this medication now for over 3 years, almost 4 years. And initially she was told she... shouldn't be on it for more than 2 years.
Let's get to Sir Jim. Are you aware of this, Jim?
So, Sam, we're, again, sorry to hear what you've said there. This is a complex area where the NHS is basically trying to implement the recommendations of the CAS review and various other related processes. I can't quite follow what's happened in your case. So, again,
if you
could get me
another question, or do you rather deal with an email?
If you could get me the details, I'll have a colleague look specifically into your circumstances, if that's okay.
All right, thanks for that. From tomorrow, family doctors will be ordered to review at least one in four referrals. This after it comes a report that too many fit notes were being signed by doctors without any consultation, either in person or in video. How will that change the system? Is it a necessary alteration?
So there's a lot going on. So there was some data published recently that looked like a lot of fit notes are given out without any interaction. Well, the data suggested it was true. It's always more complicated than the data suggests in the NHS.
And in some instances, it's because the doctors feared some kind of physical altercation, I read.
Yeah, so people do, GP colleagues, do feel under pressure
That's
for
outrageous.
That. So, going back to your earlier point, our NHS colleagues have to put up a lot with a lot that they shouldn't have to put up with. So that's being addressed and worked through currently. Ideally, you would want people not to feel under threat in that way, but they do. So, but we also need to make sure that fit notes are issued with some proper interaction and assessment, and because we do have an absence problem in England.
All right, last minute or so together. I don't know, do you have members of the PCS working within the National Health Service, Public Commercial Services Union, or not?
We'll do. I'm not
you
sure
will.
How many.
Okay. Yeah. So they are saying, because of the increase in cost of living, because of the increase in petrol, they should not have to work from the office. They should move away from that mandatory. What is the policy as regards working from home, as opposed, obviously not for doctors, but I mean your backup and your clerical staff, Jim?
Yeah. So every individual NHS organisation will have its own policies. So generally in trusts, people are generally in the office most of the time. And that's been normal for the last sort of couple of years post-COVID. In the organisation, our own NHS England, it's been the rule has been 40% of time in the office, and we've been trying to align with the civil service rules.
Because so 2 days a week?
Yeah, and the NHS
is
trying to move towards 3, which is the civil service rules. And that's hugely contentious, and union colleagues and staff colleagues are quite unhappy about
Where do you think it should be? You're the boss.
I think it needs to be more than 2 days, but it's a difficult issue, as has been described, from an affordability point of view, various
sort
of things. Well, because people, I think, have become used to working from home and therefore not having the expense of travel. So the change is expensive and difficult for them to come.
Where do you hope to be? Would you hope to resolve this within the next 12 months and get more of your colleagues back?
Absolutely. And if you're not in the office, you're missing out on other things as well, as we've all discussed before. Professionalism, interaction with colleagues, feeling part of a team, connection to the organisation.
Are you at your desk 3 days a week?
I'm at my desk every day.
Well, actually, physically in the office. Where are your offices? Are you in London?
In London, yeah. So I have 3 days in London and 2 days in the northeast.
Yeah, because you were once famously photographed. It must be difficult to be photographed because you were asleep on a train. Do you remember that?
I do remember. That was a horrible experience, so I'll always remember it, absolutely.
What was your reaction to waking up and seeing your picture on the train and sleeping on a laptop?
It was awful, and it was awful for the family. I would just say, that the day before that I'd worked 17 hours, and that day I worked 15 hours, so I'd shut my eyes for a few minutes before I did another few hours' work. But it's horrible. It's very intrusive and invasive.
I know. Well, the price of being a public figure. Last word to potentially striking doctors. You spoke with Ron Wright at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Many, as you probably realise, I have a lot, and I'm privileged to say I have a lot of people working within the NHS who listen to this show.
Yeah.
A final word from you. This 48-hour deadline, the day after Easter, you run the NHS, the hospitals that we all rely on. A final word to the doctors.
This is all resolvable. There was a lot of progress made up until about 10 days ago. I thought we had a deal. Colleagues have worked really well together to reach agreement, get the balance right between jobs and pay. It's right on the edge of what's affordable and possible. I would really urge everybody to pull together and get this agreed, get the strikes called off so we can deliver what we need for the population.
You're a busy man. I appreciate the half hour you spent with us. Thank you. Sir Jim Mackey, Chief Executive Officer at NHS England. Time for the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Farm Global's newsrooms. Keir Starmer is preparing to chair an emergency COBRA meeting this morning to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. Yesterday, Keir met business leaders and said tackling the fallout must be a joint effort. Figures show a rise in shop price inflation as well as big increases in the cost of oil and gas in recent weeks. Speaking to Nick this morning, the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, dismissed claims not enough's being done to help with motoring costs.
The 5p cut in fuel duty has already been extended until September. We took that decision, as well as the decision
Poland
to reduce the energy price cap last November, because we knew last November that the cost of living was a top priority for people. What is happening in the Middle East, Nick, makes the decisions that we have taken to tackle the cost of living, to bring down energy bills, even more important.
The Prime Minister's given resident doctors 48 hours to call off planned strike action in England. Keir Starmer says a proposed deal, including thousands of extra NHS training posts, could be withdrawn if it goes ahead. The six-day walkout is due to begin next Tuesday. Sir Jim Mackey is the Chief Executive Officer at NHS England. He's told Nick he hopes issues can be resolved before that day.
I'd rather we just reached agreement, to be honest. I think that's the ideal position. There's still a chance. My preference would be,
of course,
colleagues getting the room sorted out.
Of course.
But the reality is that those doctors, those extra training places cost money.
Yes.
If we're going to be spending money on managing industrial action, pay other colleagues extra to cover shifts, that money will disappear.
It's a necessity from the log. If the logjam stays, you really don't have an option cash-wise.
Yeah.
The BMA says creating posts and improving patient care should not be dependent on calling off strike action. The Independent Grooming Gangs inquiry is to directly examine whether ethnicity, culture or religion influenced offending in England and Wales. The terms of reference have just been published, which will be laid before Parliament when it returns after Easter. Chair Baroness Longfield says the team will not avoid issues previous reviews chose not to address. The inquiry aims to conclude by March 2028. From today, non-crime hate incidents which don't meet the criminal threshold will no longer be investigated in England and Wales. Ministers say the move's been made after too much of officers' time has been spent responding to routine arguments on social media. And new rules for household waste and recycling have come into force across England and Wales this morning. People will now have to separate their rubbish into a maximum of four different bins for waste collectors to pick up. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 61 at 10,189. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. The odd shower in the southeast, with widespread sunny spells developing by the afternoon. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compensa Market. Take it away, Sergei.
I need a Nero. I'm holding up for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 5 minutes after nine on Tuesday the 31st of March. Let's reflect on the conversation we've just had with the Chief Executive of NHS England and that ultimatum from the Prime Minister. 48 hours to call off your strike action, junior doctors, or we'll cancel training for 4,000 extra places, which surely, as the resident doctor who phoned in, Farouk in Kent, well, that's just storing up more problems. How healthy or otherwise is that ultimatum? In other news, the grooming gang inquiry is launched, but we don't know where it's going to take place, and it could run until 2029. Justice for those unfortunate victims? We'll give you more details on that. And then later in this hour,
farmers in a quiet North Essex village say that they're being terrorised by hare coursers. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Linsall.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Just before we play you, and of course the alarm clock might have sounded 6 minutes ago and you weren't listening just now, but we had the Chief Executive of NHS England in very
appropriately as well, as we heard this ultimatum from the Prime Minister, which we also covered in our first hour, Sakir giving doctors a 48-hour ultimatum to call off their, quote, reckless strikes. In a threat to resident doctors, once known as junior doctors, he said he would withdraw an offer to provide at least 4,000 new speciality training posts if they go ahead with their planned strikes immediately after Easter. It is worth saying that the level of industrial action now, this will be a 6-day strike, by the way, 6 days over a request for 26% pay rise, scheduled to start Tuesday, the day after Easter. It would be, if it goes ahead, the 15th round of action in 3 years, with 59 days lost so far. And the doctors have, according to West Streeting, enjoyed a 30% pay hike over recent years. 30%. They still say it's not enough. I'll share some of the figures that doctors earn. They are, as I just referenced in the previous half hour of the show, a fantastic body of men and women. They are, quite literally, which is literally overused, saving lives as we speak now, as I speak, as you and I are chatting now. Those men and women are saving lives, are making crucial decisions. But at what point does that mean you just do away with any fiscal responsibility? Now, unsurprisingly, given the ultimatum and how that has hit the news headlines, the first call that Sir Jim Mackey, the chief executive of the NHS, took was from a resident doctor based in Maidstone in Kent, Farouk.
The main thing I'm concerned about is why are the training posts even being used as a bargaining chip? I think they should be completely separate. I think, as you know, NHS waiting lists are at an all-time high, and corridor care is also eminent in most hospitals across the UK. Surely, by reducing training numbers, you're reducing future consultants of the future, and that's a catch-22 where you'll be in this negative cycle where there's less consultants of the future because there's less training posts. It works well in everyone's interest if we have more training posts, because at the end of the day, you'll have more consultants, and more consultants means more doctors to see patients.
Yeah, thanks, Farouk. So the and really, really good point. As I said earlier, ideally we want to reach agreement on the whole package, and colleagues had worked really hard on trying to get the balance right of extra pay and an expansion of training places. We are limited by the overall amount of money that we've got, though. So the NHS is a big part of public spending, as we talk about a lot, over £200 billion. And there has actually been a really big expansion of the consultant workforce over the last few years as well. So the training places are part of that. We're right on the outer edges of what's affordable and achievable to provide people good training, but we're confident we can do it. And it is just the necessary part of normal negotiations that things get tied together and traded off against each other.
But to Farouk's point, aren't we just making more problems down the line, surely, Jim?
So as I've said before, Nick, we've had a big expansion in the consultant workforce in recent years. We've also had a growth in workload, but not in keeping with the expansion in the workforce. If we go too far in creating too many training slots, we'll find it hard to find people consultant jobs at the end of the process. So it's a very, very finely balanced system. And on the bit about whether it's right or wrong for them to be withdrawn, it's just the, you know, a necessity of the thing being financially constrained. If we're paying money to cover strike action, the money has to come from somewhere.
Let's bring Farouk. Farouk, just a point from... Go on, yeah, sorry, go ahead and then I'll come back. Farouk.
There was a Lancet article that I was reading based on the current working model which was done, and there's a prediction that by 2048 we'd be 11 to 15,000 consultants short based on population. So I think part of the increase was to increase medical student places. However, if we're then increasing medical student places but we don't have the jobs to train them, we'll still have the shortfall of the consultant. And I see that on a day-to-day basis. You know, I can see on a day-to-day basis clinics getting cancelled because there's no consultant to take the clinic, or patients waiting up to 12 hours because there's no consultant to do, for example, a post-take ward round. So I think these are really, really key patient safety, which isn't being painted in the media. I think in the media, doctors are being painted as, you know, they just want more money, but actually the jobs is quite an important part too.
Farouk, before I let Sir Jim respond to that, just briefly, and I will ask the Chief Executive Officer of the NHS England to respond, I just want to put to you what Wes Streeting would be saying, which is for the most experienced resident doctors, basic pay would have increased to 77,348. First-year doctors out of medical school, £52,000 a year, 12,000 more than 3 years ago. It does seem like a lot of money to other industries and other professions. Farouk.
Sure, but I think, Nick, as we've been telling about the pay, I think we're still... you know, we're still under a real terms pay erosion from 2008. And until
so is everyone, Farouk. That's not unique to doctors.
The erosion that doctors have felt over that period of time with the increased workload that doctors had to take because of the decreased amount of staff, okay. I think that real terms pay is felt a lot more in the pocket than...
than others. Okay, quick response to patient safety, if you would, Jim.
Yeah, so on the patient safety thing, Farouk's rightly mentioned that we haven't been delivering the standards that we would all wanted to be delivering on corridors or outpatient productivity or waiting times, whatever it is. So we're taking action to deal with that, and hopefully we'll cover that a bit more in the next few questions as well. The reality is, though, we've had a very, very big expansion of the workforce compared to 2019 and a marginal increase in workload, which is when people talk about the challenges we've got, that is one of our challenges. So we as you roll that forward and then technology gets more adopted and enabled in the NHS and we shift models of care, it should be the case that we can manage within the forecasts that we've got.
Well, that's Sir Jim Mackey. Let's come to you. Nick, you're in Callington. Nick, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Hi. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
I think it's the first time I've ever spoken to you, actually.
Lovely to have you on. Thank you. How great to have Nick to Nick. Off we go, Nick.
Absolutely. Nick. Great name, too. It's just very annoying that at this time when everybody else is struggling, with what's going on in the world and the price rises on absolutely everything else, that once again the doctors decide to open the door, come in and see what else they can get out of the basket. They got the largest pay rise of any public or frankly private sector worker. When this government came in, and services just haven't improved at all, and I mean, I've been on the pain clinic, I've been on it 16 months. It took me 8 months to even get seen.
Just to put the other case, and I want to come back to your case, but the doctors would say, the BMA would say that the demand restoration of pay levels the doctors had in 2008, they are 26% back on where they were back in 2008. Nick?
I'm sure that the entire civil service could say the same thing. The average pay rises that we've been getting where I work is 3%.
Yeah. I mean, would again say it's not a race to the bottom, Nick, is how they would respond to that.
Yeah, I know. I just think that they could pick their timing a lot better and be a little bit more reasonable with their demands, because everybody's suffering.
Yeah.
I know that junior doctors put in an awful lot of hours and they do a really, really great job.
Yeah.
But now is not the time to be trying to fleece a system when everybody else is suffering.
Tell me about you. What is it that you're waiting for? You briefly touched on it.
Basically, I've had several hernia operations past, which have, they failed. I've had five. I've managed to keep myself at work, but even so, it does cause me a certain amount of pain. So I got registered with the pain clinic. Mm. It took me 8 months, and actually, that was an expedited appointment, would you believe? And it took eight months to even see somebody, and I've been waiting another 8 months and I still haven't had any resolution. And in that period of time, I've actually had a couple of texts come through asking me if I would like to be taken off the list.
Why would on earth would you want to be taken off? You're in a degree of pain, presumably, aren't you?
Well, it's more of a discomfort thing. I'm waiting for steroid injections, but I mean, it can get quite uncomfortable.
Sure it can. Nick, thank you. I hope the situation remedies itself. As we heard from the Chief Executive of NHS England, he reckons they're going to be 0.2% off their target, because the story that was run in The Guardian only had the first 10 months of this last year, the first 10, i.e. 2 months to go. Nick, thank you. Steph says, I can't get a GP appointment, can't get a diagnosis. My wife's the same. I'm sick and tired of GPs doing nothing while the public pays more money in tax. And I'm an ex-trade union rep, says Steph. Doing nothing? Ursula in Hindhead was listening to Sir Jim. The NHS England man is simply too nice. For instance, you want people back in the office, then make it happen. Stop making excuses. We need stronger leadership. We'll have more on that in a moment. Plus, leadership on the grooming gang inquiry. We have the details now. It has started today, but they haven't actually got a location yet. And what, in your view, what must it determine? Where must it go without fear or favour? The areas to explore in the grooming gang scandal that's blighted so many towns and cities the length and breadth of the United Kingdom. We'll have more on that after this. It's 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, the Chief Secretary to the Treasury has pushed back on claims not enough's being done to help drivers with rising costs due to the Iran war. The Prime Minister's warned thousands of new NHS training places could be scrapped if resident doctors in England go ahead with strike action next week. And police in England and Wales will no longer record what are known as non-crime hate incidents. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, the odd shower in the southeast, widespread sunny spells developing by the afternoon, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb in Glasgow. The M8 is closed eastbound between junctions 17 at Charing Cross and 15 at Townhead. It's because the overnight works are still taking place, so the motorway stays closed. Huge delays back past junction 27 at Paisley, but it's also affecting the M77 northbound from junction 4 at Newton Mearns. Also, delays continue in West Yorkshire on the M62 westbound. It's slow at junction 27 at Gildersham, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. Also, delays on the M1 in Bedfordshire going northbound to junction 10 at Luton Airport. A car's broken down on the exit slip road, but there are delays back into the main carriageway. And in London, very busy in Mitcham. Cricket Green remains closed eastbound.
Hear every side of the story. LBC.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish Ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
With over 50 years experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I have to say, there's not a lot of love in the room for resident doctors at the moment. This comes in from, do remember to sign them, Mala. DJ, doctors are very well paid if the whole package is considered. Most doctors do private and NHS work. I pay £300 for a 15-minute appointment with a consultant private. Their egos are inflated. James, I'm slowly becoming less and less supportive of the doctors and their calls for pay rise. In my near 30-year military career, it's only recently where we received the highest pay increase since the days of Margaret Thatcher. We've had more pay freezes than increases over my career. This comes in Eve in Suffolk. I've had quite a few health problems at the moment. I've just been referred to a spinal consultant. The working time, 47 weeks. They need to sort it out. Lastly, this one. Again, I'm just reading Alex in Enfield. Consultants are lazy, dumping their caseload on juniors. I've seen this for years. I'm in the NHS. So is Ashu in Southwark. Ashu, morning. Are you a resident doctor?
No, I'm not. I'm a doctor myself, though.
You're a doctor?
I'm a GP.
You're a GP, general practitioner. Yes, right, okay. Level of sympathy towards your colleagues known as resident or junior doctors, Ashu?
Absolute sympathy. I mean, junior doctors don't do private care or get paid for private care.
No, they don't. It might be further down the line, of course. It's fair to say that.
Yes. Secondly, these training places Starmer is talking about removing. Just a few weeks ago, there were training places as part of the foundation program, which were in place for junior doctors, medical students now, to apply to all junior doctor positions. But suddenly, mid-cycle, they were all withdrawn. Mm. And that pot of junior potential junior doctors were then put into the same application pot as everybody else. So when he's already withdrawn so many places, I don't know which further places he's talking about withdrawing.
Let me be honest with you, Ashu. I understand the Prime Minister's frustration with resident doctors, but the idea, well, I'm going to cancel places, is just storing up more problems for the future. I think it's the most ludicrous ultimatum to hold over them.
Well, it's also destroying confidence and actual jobs right now. It's not just for the future. My friend was recently starting work as a junior doctor at F1 out of medical school. Her first job was on ITU in a training hospital, mm-hmm. as a night shift. Imagine starting on ITU as a night shift with next to no support as a junior doctor out of medical school. That's what people are expected to perform as. And these are potential, supposedly, training jobs which people are being started on. Yeah. How is that safe? And which person in the world would want a junior doctor with next to no experience looking after them, and particularly what? Overworked and paid such little amount? Why? When you're responsible for people's lives, do you not expect doctors to be paid accordingly to...
Well, then there's no value. Then there's no money you can put on it, of course, if you do that.
But in
reality... And I do sense this from the responses I'm getting from my listeners, Ashu, and we all accept you and your colleagues are saving lives. It's phenomenal. But when you look at the fact now that the resident doctors have received the highest pay rise of all public sector workers for 2 years in a row, they've enjoyed a 26% pay rise over the last 5 years. The first-year doctor will earn £52,000 a year, £12,000 more than 3 years ago. Basic pay will go to £74,000, and that's more than £100,000 if an overtime and weekends are considered. Then that's not bad money, Ashu.
But please tell me, when you talk about overtime being considered, tell me exactly how many hours they're doing, how many night shifts a week they're doing, how many full-day shifts, 12-hour shifts they are doing,
But no one surely comes into the NHS without knowing that they are going to do some pretty grueling hours. Everyone knows that.
They don't expect the training to be not available. They don't expect the training jobs to be pulled out from under their feet.
But do you understand why increasing members of the public, not the whole public, but increasing members of the public are saying, no, they have earned enough. They've had the highest public sector pay rise for 2 years in a row. You do understand some people now are questioning the wisdom of this strike action.
When this is considering back pay, and this is an ongoing strike over recent years, it's not a here and now situation. It's a restorative pay demand.
But you could have that for everyone. Everybody. Absolutely, I'm sure there are bus drivers listening and firefighters and milk men and women who would all say that. Butchers, bakers,
yes,
and candlestick makers, Ashu.
And let's put our cases forward.
But
that's what this is all about.
Well, the government can't afford... I mean, my goodness me, they've had the highest pay rise for 2 years on the spin.
But the government can afford so many other things. They manufacture or pull money out of the air when they need to for other things. I mean, the government can actually literally print money as and when they choose to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the economic wisdom of printing money. I think we've seen what happens, unfortunately, when we've done that in the past. Ashu, thank you for the work you do. I'm very grateful, and I'm sure your patients, assuming you work in Southwark, which is where you've called from, are very grateful too. We'll take more calls on that in a moment. Now, as I've mentioned a couple of occasions now, the national inquiry into the grooming gang scandal will finally begin today. It could run until 2029. After months of delays, ministers promising it will focus on whether ethnicity and religion did play a role. Now, as you know, in many cases, victims were young white girls preyed on by gangs of Asian men, mostly of Pakistani origin. Sir Keir Starmer spent months resisting an inquiry, only approved one following pressure from figures including Elon Musk and even Conservative Kemi Badenoch. It is set to cost £65 million. It will have powers to force witnesses to give evidence, effectively subpoena powers. It will also assess why victims were often ignored. As yet, it's yet to have a location. I don't quite understand why. Oldham is among the first areas to face a probe, but we don't know where it will be sited. Well, for someone, this is all too real and personal. Elizabeth is a survivor and joins me now. Good to have you on. You were originally going to be involved in this, and of course then you decided that you wanted to resign. Remind the listeners why that was, Elizabeth. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I resigned because I felt the panel that I was on and the people running it was not being transparent. It was very secretive, very just like the traits of how we were treated historically.
I remember we discussed that at the time. Yeah. I don't know whether the chair or the chairperson had been appointed then, Baroness Anne Longfield, a former children's commissioner. Elizabeth, remind me, when we spoke, did we know that she was going to be the chair of it?
No, we didn't.
And I know you had issues with some of the other potential chairs, and I understand why that. Do you take confidence from Baroness Longfield's appointment?
I did actually meet Annie about a month ago, and I went along to a meeting with other survivors, along with Maggie Oliver.
And, yes, she's the GMP, Greater Manchester Police Officer, yep.
Yeah, and as soon as I walked in the room, Annie Longfield presented herself and was absolutely amazing, if I'm honest. I haven't got a problem with Annie as a person, but after, and I did come out with a bit of confidence thinking, maybe we've got that person that'll come out and tell everything. But this week, with the files going missing and things like potentially going missing and things like that, I'm thinking now it's going to take somebody strong to go up against that kind of things.
Where does it need to go, this inquiry, in your view, Elizabeth?
We need transparency, we need the truth, we need it to be looking at factors where other people have turned a blind eye to, about the motives of these gangs, the motive of why the authorities didn't do anything. We just need the truth, basically.
And briefly, can you remind the listeners of what happened to you in this area?
Absolutely, yeah. So I was 14. My abuse were originally facilitated by a woman who locked me in a flat for 10 weeks. My dad, my mum were ringing the authorities, begging for help, even referred themselves into social services. Social services wouldn't do anything. One day my dad had had enough, went over to the property and were arrested twice. I was also trafficked to Bristol from Rotherham, and both sets of the police forces were saying we're not a taxi firm, we don't bring me back. It ended up that it was a local youth project that actually got me back, and the thing is, back then it was the youth projects that were actually helping the girls.
How much was race a factor in what you endured, Elizabeth?
Right, we can't get past the fact that predominantly group-based abuse, the grooming gangs, is predominantly Pakistani male. They were in my case as well. And it's something we need to talk about, and not just for the grooming gangs. Mm. It's about the divide that's happened between communities as well, to try and repair that. We need to be looking at ways forward and not ignoring it.
And lastly, just to clarify, so will they be taking evidence from you now? Will Baroness Longfield seek to bring you in, or have you chosen not to get involved?
I hope after me resigning from the inquiry that I will be giving my evidence in, because it's important. I hope I can do that. But obviously, again, it just relies on the fact whether I'm comfortable with it or not. If I don't agree with it and I feel like I'm becoming complicit in wrongdoings, then I'll walk away again.
Elizabeth, thanks again for appearing on my show. Very appreciative. Elizabeth, survivor, who did resign from the inquiry, but now has confidence, I'm pleased to say, in Baroness Longfield, the former Children's Commissioner. Where does that inquiry have to go, in your view? We'll come to that. Also, you may recall around this time last year, we were doing stories about problems in the Fens in Cambridgeshire, villagers accusing police of abandoning them. after scores of suspected travellers drove cars through fields, set fire to vehicles, even attacking fire engines while they were hare coursing. Well, it's not restricted to the Fens. To North Essex, a farmer in Linsell, who didn't want to give their name, told LBC...
It's a worry. You don't want to go away from the farm for too long because you know that they're going to be about. We know of other people, farmers, who've been assaulted, jaws broken with iron bars.
Yes, a full report from LBC's Henry Riley after this. It's 9.31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC News Time, Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Secretary to the Treasury has denied claims not enough's been done to protect drivers against rising costs due to the Iran war. James Murray's told Nick this morning that measures such as the fuel duty freeze and the Fuel Finder website are already helping to lower motoring costs. The Independent Grooming Gangs inquiry is to directly examine whether ethnicity, culture or religion influenced offending in England and Wales. Chair Baroness Longfield says the team will not have avoid issues previous reviews chose not to address. And resident doctors in England are being given 48 hours by the Prime Minister to call off planned strike action next week. Sir Keir Starmer's warning a proposed deal, including 1,000 extra training posts, could be withdrawn if it goes ahead. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, the odd shower in the southeast, widespread sunny spells by the afternoon, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tony, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Scott has called from Glasgow. Hi, Scott.
Jane's in Camden first. Hi, Jane.
Households will benefit from £150 off of their energy bills with a price cap, giving households certainty on their bills until July.
Hear every side of the story.
You feel like asking much of a luxury now to heat your house.
Farmer is going to have to get involved.
I'm at the petrol station and it's just cost me nearly £100 to fill up half.
I'm almost in my 40s and I haven't ever had a break in war. In any of these living costs.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now, we've got some great deals for you to make the most of, so you can secure your dream holiday and get the best choice of rooms and hotels. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Apt and natural protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060973.
Time to talk hair coursing. We will come back to our conversation about resident or junior doctors and your level of support for them, and of course that grooming gang inquiry. But incidents of hair coursing are rising in some rural communities, despite it being illegal in the UK. It was almost 12 months ago that we were talking about this with a problem in the Fenland communities in Cambridgeshire. Traumatised villagers accusing the police then of abandoning them after scores of suspected travellers drove cars through fields, set fire to vehicles, even attacked two fire engines while hare coursing. The practice sees hounds chase hares across open farmland, with the act often live-streamed for betting, with the hare ultimately being killed, then vehicles being set alight. Again, if you listen to me for any time, you'll know that my vehicle, a four-wheel drive vehicle, was stolen in May last year. And of the two or three main lines of inquiry, one was that it was off to Felixstowe, off to Dubai and then into Africa. And the other was that it would be used for illegal coursing. And then they set them on, goodness knows why, but they like to set those vehicles alight, presumably because they're nicked. Well, we've talked about the problems in Fens and in Cambridgeshire. One area which has seen recent activity is in North Essex, with farmers saying they feel that they're being terrorised. LBC's Henry Riley went to the village of Linsell in North Essex to file this report.
Can you see those two hares?
two hares in that field?
Hare coursing is typically individuals entering, trespassing onto land with long dogs with an intent to set those dogs to chase and kill and capture hares. Typically, people will drive across land, which will cause damage to crops. They will threaten, be abusive, and there'll be violence towards landowners.
Despite being made a criminal offence in 1828 and completely banned under the 2004 Hunting Act, hare coursing is continuing and is prevalent in rural Essex.
It's been a massive issue. We've had nearly 200 incidents this hare coursing season since crops were combined in July. Hare coursers know they're going to get away with it.
We know of other people, farmers, who've been assaulted, jaws broken with iron bars.
I've come to Linsall, a sleepy North Essex village with just a few hundred residents, but with farmers too afraid to identify themselves.
It's a worry. You don't want to go away from the farm for too long because you know that they're going to be about.
Hare coursers know they're going to get away with it.
To find out more, I'm spending the day with Essex Police's rural engagement team.
My name's Inspector Terry Jacobs and I lead our rural engagement team.
Acting Sergeant Callum Barber.
PC Luke Jones. We bought 11 trail cameras, but this morning we've put two up.
Deploying our drone, which allows us to get an overview and see from up above anyone that may be coursing out in these fields.
The zoom capability and the thermal capability of that drone is brilliant. About sort of a mile away, I can see a car's index plate.
Two-thirds of this county is rural and a lot of that flat, making areas like Linsall a prime spot for the crime. Inspector Terry Jacobs.
People will be out in these areas because they're rural and isolated, so there's not many people around, there's not passers-by, and that's probably what plays into the advantage of those hare coursing. The communities that undertake hare coursing are typically quite close-knit. There's a lot of money involved and betting around dogs and who's going to be the fastest and the number of turns they'll make, and there's anecdotal information that this is live-streamed and betting happens online as well.
But farmers here are having their lives blighted.
Huge amounts of crop damage are caused very, very regularly. People are very threatening. You can't approach these people. The rural engagement team have been good, but local policing teams, they won't get off the road. Even when people are hare coursing in front of them, they have stood in the yard and said, sorry, we can't go over there. We're never going to be able to get to the location where they are before they've run off.
Turning up late in the afternoon for a couple of hours coursing and seem to just disappear when the police do turn up. The cars vanish out of sight.
It is the same offenders coming week in, week out.
Officers have carried out nearly 200 patrols of the Uttlesford district. They've organised public events, but the longer this goes on, the longer the pain for landowners.
This winter we've put in hundreds and hundreds of hours just to try and keep these people off. We're out three times a day, as a very minimum, checking that they're not driving on crops, destroying gates, just generally terrorising us as local farmers.
One farmer concluding LBC's Henry Riley's report from North Essex. Now, if you're in a part of the country, if you're in the Fens or you're part of that part of Essex or through Suffolk and you're experiencing such similar problems, and again, you feel that the police aren't doing enough, clearly this is a very live issue. And as I said, I think in the first day of the show, as if farmers haven't got it tough enough at the moment, what with the imposition of these taxes. Now, they wake up in the morning and they go and see that half their arable crop has been destroyed by a load of people driving around in Jeeps and Range Rovers. Dear, oh dear, we'll take your calls on that. But we are talking about the NHS, and we're talking about the ultimatum from the Prime Minister to doctors who are set to strike the day after Easter when we all come back. I think it will be their 59th day of strike action. Let me just get those figures absolutely nailed. Yes, here we are. 15th round of action in 3 years, 59 days. Your level of support or otherwise. Dudley's in Milton Keynes. Dudley, you're on the radio. Your view. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Thank you for letting me talk to you.
Not at all. That's what we're about.
I think my personal point of view is, I mean, I think that the resident doctors do a great job, as do the nurses as well, and they all deserve a bigger pay increase. But I think the fact that the MBA haven't actually given the ballot on this.
BMA, I think.
On this at all. Yes. Sorry, BMA,
no,
sorry.
That's the National Basketball Association. They really are very troublesome.
Yes, they haven't given the vote at all.
No, they haven't.
And added to the fact they were given quite a big pay increase recently.
Well, let me ask you this. So last week, the BMA rejected the government's 7.1% offer without putting it to members for a vote. That would then take, had they accepted it, it would have taken them to just under 34% pay rise in the last 3 years, which I don't think is a bad level of pay increase, to be honest with you.
No, I totally agree with you. And the fact that you mentioned that they haven't actually put this vote to ballot at all. and the fact that not only are they taking strike action, but they're taking it for the length of time now, 6 days as well, I think really is irresponsible. Just when the figures starting to get better and more people are being seen, it's just taking things back to square one again.
Have you changed? If I remind you, so this is the 15th round of action, if it goes ahead a week today. Yes, if it goes ahead a week today. When it first started, how supportive were you of the doctors? Now we've had 59 days of strike action. How supportive are you now, Dudley?
I think to start off with, I think I was very supportive. I thought, yes, they've got a really good case. You know, they should have something done for them. But now I think I've got absolutely no support from whatsoever. I think they've really overstepped their mark this time. And I think they've lost a lot of support from people.
I think you're right. Dudley, let's turn to some of the social media that's coming in. Thanks for that, Dudley. Someone who says to respect their anonymity, and of course I will. What about admin staff? Haven't had the pay rise the doctors are getting. Admin staff are the backbone and keep the NHS running at times of strike under extreme pressure always. This comes in from James. I'm slowly becoming less and less supportive of the doctors and their calls for a pay rise. In my near 30-year military career, it's only recently where we received the highest pay increase since the days of Margaret Thatcher. We've had more pay freezes and increases. I cannot go on strike to demand more pay. The country want the military to more deployments, even clearing up the rubbish in Birmingham. Simon in Halifax. I was referred over 2 years ago to ENT and neurology for follow-up appointments for FND diagnosis, which is functional neurological disorder. No acknowledgement, no appointment, and not yet on any waiting list. The government is hiding the truth about waiting lists. They are not going down. Rather, there is a huge black hole of people not appearing in any statistics. The NHS is being very badly managed. Well, you had the opportunity, of course, hearing from the chief executive officer of the NHS. Many of you actually were tuned into what he said and had a certain degree of respect. But if you look at the reality, of course, does it actually mean that you're getting your treatment? Let's talk a little bit about hair coursing. Caroline in Somerset, re-hair coursing. Why don't the hunt saboteurs police this cruel activity with the same zeal that they attend fox hunting? Could it be a class distinction? That's an interesting one. This comes in from Alf in Halifax. I don't understand why you limit the feature to the southeast. It's a national disgrace. There are events taking place throughout the country. You need to reflect this. Alf, it's just because the newspapers so far, they focused on the Fens, which is in Cambridgeshire and Lincolnshire. We focused on North Essex. If it's going on in your part of Yorkshire, I'm very, very happy to say it and to say that it is a growing problem, without doubt. All right, we'll continue with that conversation. Also coming up after the news, we're going to come into more of your reactions concerning those resident doctors. And don't forget the grooming gang inquiry. Finally, it will go ahead. It starts today, although they don't actually have a venue. It's predicted it will last until 2029 and will cost somewhere in the region of £65 million. This follows, of course, the Prime Minister spending months resisting a national inquiry, talking about there just being a need for certain local inquiries. That's now changed. I'm asking you, where does it need to go? What do we need to finally conclude in 2029? Dear God, what do we need to finally conclude to know that whatever sort of cover-up went on, whether with police, local authorities, NHS trusts over the ethnicity of the vast majority of those who committed these gross crimes, you will feel satisfied. And we'll come back to that. It's 9:45, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to LBC, the Chief Secretary to the Treasury has pushed back on claims the government's not doing enough to protect drivers from rising fuel costs due to the Iran war. Three teenagers have been charged with the murder of 16-year-old Chloe Dransfield in Leeds on Saturday. And the Independent Grooming Gangs inquiry is to directly examine whether ethnicity, culture or religion influenced offending in England and Wales. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most. The odd shower in the southeast. Widespread sunny spells by the afternoon. A high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very busy in Greenford as Sudbury Hill is closed westbound at the Harrow Road, and that's because of emergency repair works. Also, long delays in South Wimbledon because Morden Road is restricted northbound because of the ongoing works. In Mitcham, Cricket Green is closed eastbound for the emergency repairs, and very busy on the M1 northbound, heading up towards Junction 10 at Luton Airport, and that's because a car has broken down. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Marylebone Flight
flyover and the northern roundabout at the West Cross Street. It's because of the ongoing works. And on the underground, Victoria Station is currently closed because the fire alarms are going off.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
More moving parts than usual, I think, to the looming doctor's strike and Keir Starmer's attempts to stop it. Not that easy, I suggest, to pick a side.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Imagine sweeping through green fields, floating 5 feet above ground. Sun on your face as you slide by, on track to your destination. Not a care in the world, as you simply lean back. And before you know it, you're there. This is how travel should feel. And on our trains, it does. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC. Darling, hold my
hand. Oh, won't you hold my hand? Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now, we've got some great deals for you to make the most of. So you can secure your dream holiday and get the best choice of rooms and hotels. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Patronato protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. And for this week only, we're also guaranteeing five winners of £20,000 in our bonus draw. Enter by midnight on Sunday to be in the draw. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Resident doctors in just a moment, but as regards hair coursing, Andy in Chelmsford, which I remind you is Essex, I think it's the county town actually, let's address the elephant in the room regarding hair coursing. Those responsible are, by and large, travellers. They do not feel laws apply to them. They're happy to steal, damage, threaten and assault, do what they want and think they can get away with it. As regards the grooming gangs, Peter in Croydon, do we think the London Mayor now understands what grooming gangs are? Last time he was asked, he was unclear. Let's go to Jan in Rotherham on the idea of resident doctors. Do they deserve another pay rise, in your view? Good morning.
Hey, good morning. No, absolutely not. My view, I'm an ex-nurse, ex-wife, so I'm speaking with experience of being paid by the NHS. It's taxpayers' money.
Yes.
So where is the rest of this money going to come from? Because it can just increase taxes. But also, when you go into the NHS, you don't think, oh, yeah, this is going to be the best paid job in the world. Unless you're really stupid, you don't go in without realising that you are going to be quite poorly paid until you go through the ranking.
Yeah.
Maybe become.
Should that be the justification, though, for keeping people's wages down? What do you think, Jan?
Well, there's a finite amount of money, and people are being taxed to the hilt anyway. Mm. So unless you actually privatise the NHS and go on to private salaries, then it's always going to be like this.
How long ago did you leave the NHS?
5 years, 6 years.
So this industrial action hadn't started, but was there always a degree of tension between nurses and doctors over the different salary scales?
Yes, there is. I mean, doctors do inherently get paid a bit more now, but they didn't used to. Before they abolished the, 72-hour week or something, you know, they got a pittance for what they did and the hours that they were expected to work. So I get why, and I'm not decrying them for going this way, but I don't think striking is the best opportunity because they'll fall out of public favour. You know, we can't get an appointment because the doctor's on strike.
Yes.
So why should we then think about even increasing our taxes to pay the wages of these people? So we're stuck in a catch-22, really.
The job you've done has been, I would hope, hugely emotionally fulfilling, but you've not, I doubt you've become rich out of it. If you had your time over as a young girl, as a girl or a young woman, would you do it all again, or would you think, no, I tell you what, I'll go into banking, I'll go into somewhere where I might find some real money?
Yeah, I didn't start out as a nurse. I just happened to become a nurse because I moved up to the Lake District and there wasn't much else to be doing. So that's how I got into it. And I actually left the NHS in 95.
Oh, right.
Or was it 97? Something like that, because I couldn't get a part-time job. But this was this whole thing. And then I spent about 19 years out of practice and I had this unanswered question, would I have returned to be a midwife? So I did a return to practice course down in Stevenage in Hertfordshire. Absolutely banging hospital, was brilliant. And then I moved to another hospital, which shall remain nameless. And it was just like going back in the dark ages. So even though I, you know, my desire to be a midwife was still there and I absolutely loved that job, the state of the NHS and the inequalities in care between hospital trusts is massive.
Let me ask you this question, as I often ask people in conversations such as this. If you had a son or a daughter or a niece or a nephew and they said, I think I'll go into the NHS, I think I'll become a nurse, I think I'll become a midwife, what would your response be?
I'd say no, don't do it.
Why is that? Why is that, Jan?
Just because we end up in a situation now where you've got these, you know, these young, enthusiastic people. They go through university to get a degree to become a nurse, which is a big question. You don't need a degree to become a nurse. Mm. You need compassion. You need care. You need, you know, people skills.
They say you need a degree because you're handling, well, in some instances, drugs that can kill people, and you need that level of quality.
Yeah, I did that. You know, without a degree, it wasn't even a diploma. It was a vocational training. We did 6 weeks on the ward and 4 weeks in school and had 2 weeks off. When I did mine. So, you know, what's changed? There were still drugs about there that kill people, and maybe we didn't know they killed people quite as much. So, you know, there's arguments for everything, and I get it. But, you know, people come through with degrees, they think, yeah, I've got a degree. They're looking at somebody that's done a degree in engineering, who's suddenly soaring and getting £60,000 a year at the same age as these guys are getting £30,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is unequal and it does need addressing. I can't fix it, but I don't support this strike action because that's, you know, it's putting patient safety at risk.
I do think that is a reality. Jan, thank you. And I do think the Prime Minister, the patient safety aspect might have been more fruitful than you've got 48 hours to stop the strike action or I'm going to cancel 4,000 additional training places. Well, all that will mean is that when we need these men and women in 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it is, there will be a shortfall because of action taken by the Prime Minister in 2026. How does that make any sense? Jan, thank you. John in Muswell Hill. John, your level of support or otherwise. Good morning.
Well, I'm not supportive of it because as a civil servant, we had a pay freeze and then we received an offer that was, well, it wasn't a catch-up for all of it, but we didn't, as responsible adults, expect it to be. But my main beef is that with these junior doctors, they're talking about lost pay before they even had the contract of employment.
Well,
so
yeah,
they can't be claiming lost pay from... Yeah, but they can't even claim a lost pay from 2008 because they weren't in employment then. It doesn't make any sense. It's a false argument. And it's, you know, they have to be responsible at a certain point. They've had very generous pay rises for the last 2 years.
Well, they have,
but yes. I also agree with your point. Starmer making a stupid threat to pull up training cannot be in the interest of the health service. It's so irresponsible.
That just seems madness. We already have a group of men and women who are prepared to take industrial action and in some instances, obviously, jeopardise the health of some of their patients. I don't think they're going to care. It won't make any difference to them whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, I have a feeling it's a lot to do with the politics or, you know, the pay rise. But you feel that a lot of unions believe that because the Labour government came in as, you know, there's a tree of money, you know, money falls
yeah,
off.
Yeah, well, that's... I mean, Met said the Conservatives would point, rightly or wrongly, to the fact that they agreed two inflation-busting pay rises, and this has come around to bite them in the rear end. John, thank you for that. Do you remember when Labour were in opposition and we heard from Wes Streeting and indeed Sir Keir Starmer as Shadow Health Secretary and leader of the Labour Party, respectively, why don't they all just get in a room and talk? Do you remember Wes Streeting? If I was Health Secretary, I'd just get them in a room and talk. Sir Keir, how would you... Oh, well, well, clearly Rishi Sunak's failed. We need to get them in a room and talk. Not quite as easy in reality, is it? Kath's in Hounslow. Your level of support. Kath, good morning.
Hello, Nick. It's lovely to speak to you.
Well, it's lovely to speak to you. Thank you.
Yeah, I was a little vocal about this because I've been married to a doctor.
Oh.
He's the sort of person anyone who's listening on this call would want to look after them. He had to retrain as a GP about 10 years ago.
He's a GP, just to clarify.
He is now, but he's a fully qualified head and neck surgeon. He's been in the London hospital as a registrar for many years.
Right.
There's been issues with staffing they're trying to control. Various governments took the toys where these highly trained men and women end up, and he didn't really want to leave everything in London and go to Scotland. So there's all kinds of things going on. The BMA... like the RMT, there aren't many unions left now for most of our slot. And this comparison thing, comparison's odious, of saying, well, you know, I'm a nurse or I'm in the NHS doing what job. It's ridiculous. We must support. They're not junior. I hate the derogatory.
Well, that's why it's resident now, of course.
Resident is far better. And by golly, my husband was resident. They don't think your listeners know. They spend, in the 90s, these guys would sleep in the hospital ward. Most of them have got long-term sleep disruption problems because they have to be on call and they're in the ward straight away. Young men, young women, they're in A&E.
Would your husband, were he still a resident doctor, would he have taken industrial action next week?
Absolutely. Because the thing is, Nick, this has been kicked down the road by numerous governments repeatedly. We were all hoping for high things from Wes. This is a Labour government. Real Labour is about supporting the NHS. This country is going into all kinds of difficulties. We've got employment threats from AI. We still haven't got over COVID. And let's not even go into the detail of what these guys did for COVID and how many extra hours, how many things they've done.
I won't go into that, Kath, but can I ask you to give your husband our thanks? Thank you very much for the job he does, but we're out of time. Kath, give him my best wishes. Great speaking. I look forward to speaking with you again. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on the free Global Player or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Download it for free from your app store now. I'm done for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. And it is back to the Middle East that our attention inevitably turns with, I mean, development seems a strange word to use, given that they are not worth the paper that they're printed on, or indeed the social media platform that they are announced on. Donald Trump threatening stone-cold war crimes against the autocratic regime in Iran, although he claims... quixotically is an interesting word, isn't it? He claims somewhat quixotically that the regime is now much milder and much friendlier than it used to be. Again, it's not really worth the social media platform that it's printed on. So, a question I hesitate to ask, but I really want to hear your answer. How does it end? Or how can it be made to end?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the boss of NHS England has told LBC that he is concerned the conflict in Iran could lead to supply issues within the NHS. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to chair another COBRA meeting later to discuss the impact of the conflict in the Middle East. The closure of the Strait of Hormuz by Iran is restricting the global supply of energy and a wide range of goods. The Chief Executive Officer at NHS England, Sir Jim Mackey, has told LBC's Nick Ferrari, officials are braced for shocks.
We import a lot of medicines, but we are. It's an international system, the NHS, healthcare. So the supply chain is very, very international.
I mean, how much supply do we have? How many days or months or weeks in reserve
It depends what you're talking about. In every area, we've got enough to get through for a reasonable period.
What's a reasonable period? I'm a journalist. Generally,
a few weeks, but you wouldn't because
well, it goes off as well, presumably.
Because things perish.
We've contacted the government for comment. Household energy bills could rise by nearly £300 a year from July due to the conflict in Iran. Analysts Cornwall Insight says its prediction for the Ofgem price cap from July to September now stands at £1,929. That's an increase of £288 on April's cap. Ministers have promised to help those struggling with the cost of living. Three teenagers have been charged with the murder of a 16-year-old girl in Leeds. Chloe Watson-Dransfield was found with stab wounds in the Austhorpe area early on Saturday morning. She later died in hospital. The Independent Grooming Gangs inquiry is to directly examine whether ethnicity, culture or religion influenced offending in England and Wales. The chair, Baroness Longfield, says the team will not avoid issues previous reviews chose not to address. Resident doctors in England are being given 48 hours by the Prime Minister to call off planned strike action next week. Sir Keir Starmer's warned that a proposed deal, which includes 1,000 extra training posts, could be withdrawn if strikes go ahead. Government Minister James Murray's told LBC this morning he is urging doctors to take the deal on the table.
If the resident doctors ignore what the Prime Minister has said and they go ahead with the strike, it will hurt them, it will hurt the NHS, and it will hurt patients. They have a decent offer on the table.
The British Medical Association says creating posts and improving patient care should not be dependent on calling off strike action. And new rules are now in force requiring councils in England to offer a weekly food waste collection to every household. The government hopes the change will boost recycling rates. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 63 at 10,190. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most today. The odd shower in the southeast with widespread sunny spells by the afternoon. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hans, the GC here. I'm whispering because,
as the Queen,
Queen of social media, it's about time for my ASGEMR series.
So I'm recording this on my phone and then I'm going to use Canva to edit and upload it. Oh, sorry, babes. I'll make that a whisper when I edit it. Anyways, Canva makes social media edits so easy. I'll upload this in a minute. Canva, make everything iconic. How do I stop recording, Darren?
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. I think I got my Ronnies the wrong way round last week. I think that it was Ronnie Corbett in the chair and Ronnie Barker asking the questions. But there's that famous Mastermind sketch where somehow you're answering the question that was asked before and the answers render the question that's just been asked doubly hilarious. I've got my own version of that today. The first text to arrive in my inbox this morning, 4 minutes after 10, has got the two Ronnies written all over it. It goes, lols, I'm not going to read the one that came previously. It simply says, lols, sorry, just realised I'm listening to yesterday's show. If you were really in the mood for some mischief, you could send me texts that were responding to yesterday's show, but could be construed as responding to today's show in a completely comical or surreal way. But we are not Ronnie Barker, so it's highly unlikely that we would be able to cobble together comedy of that quality. 4 minutes after 10 is the time. I knew this was going to happen. I told you it was going to happen. If there was any doubt in our minds whatsoever that it was going to happen, that doubt disappeared yesterday. But the people for whom we need a slightly better name or nickname now are doing what I suppose their moral and intellectual bankruptcy demanded that they had to do. That they are now pretending that the war they wanted and the war they attacked Keir Starmer for not joining and the war that they welcomed gleefully because their hero, Donald Trump, whose racism, misogyny and climate change denial are like intravenous drips to what passes for their brain, it is going disastrously. So they're all pretending that the only thing they want to talk about is the price of petrol in this country, and that it is somehow the government's fault that the price of petrol is going up. It's a situation of, I mean, absolutely insane proportion. You've got Logan Roy. Did you watch Succession? That superb television drama, one of the finest ever. Featuring Brian Cox playing a sort of Rupert Murdoch tribute act. And his own children at one point receive, for me, the best line of the entire series. You are not serious people. And I feel like that sometimes about the British media. Not the British people, God forbid. We can only work with what we're given. But the British media, and sadly the right wing now of British politics. That wasn't always the case. But it's as if their brains have been boiled in bile and they've arrived at a place where everything is an opportunity to garner clicks on social media for attacking the currently unfortunate character charged with actually leading the country in a world that actually exists, as opposed to these fantasy worlds that can be conjured up on social media and increasingly elsewhere. What's the most important thing to talk about? Donald Trump's war in Iran. What are you going to talk about? Why Keir Starmer should do more about the price of petrol. Oh, that's odd. What was your attitude to the war when it started? Loved it. And what do you do about it now? Don't mention it at all. I've turned into Basil Fawlty. Don't mention the war. Unless, like Kemi Badenoch, who manages to go through entire episodes of Prime Minister's Questions without mentioning the war, that is by far the biggest geopolitical event to unfold in the course of her entire leadership of the Conservative Party. Just think about that for a nanosecond. The biggest geopolitical event that she will probably be the leader of the opposition for. And she called it hideously and completely wrong at the outset, and therefore has proved incapable of even mentioning it subsequently. Except to pretend that there is some way in which you can lower the price of petrol in this country by drilling for more oil in the North Sea, until she was compelled to concede that that is simply not true, despite what right-wing newspapers and commentators continue to claim. And then secondly, that it is somehow Keir Starmer's fault that the cost of fuel and indeed the cost of living is going up. Why am I talking about this? Well, it's the IMF today, I think, joining the OECD, but certainly all the big international players when it comes to financial forecasting and prediction are warning that we, by which I mean you and me, those of us in the United Kingdom, are especially exposed, we touched on this yesterday, to higher oil and gas prices, and that it is best viewed, according to the International Monetary Fund, as a, and I'm going to quote this, word for word, a large sudden tax on income. The world faces yet another shock, they explained. And at risk of adding to your burdens, it made me reflect upon how little we know about the stuff that really matters, or at least about the stuff that doesn't matter until it really does. One of my all-time favourite subjects on this programme, we stumbled into it about 10 years ago, was, oddly enough, the business of finding a care home for an elderly relative. And it was while we were discussing that that I stumbled into a phrase to describe subjects that this sort of media was invented for. The subjects about which you know nothing until you need to know everything. You've got to find a home for your mum. Your dad's got dementia. You've got to get them into a home. You know nothing about...